Good evening, everyone. I'm going to call this meeting to order. I have no announcements, and we will start right out with the assigned counsel. And you, they are here, and welcome.
Thank you. For your reference, down there, key to down. Good evening.
Hello.
Mr. Mur, is it, I'm sorry, is it Morey?
Morey.
I don't know you. I'm Julia Hughes. I'm the coordinator for the assigned counsel program. And I've worked here about 17 years. I'm eligible for retirement in February. just some personal history. This is our budget for 2016. If you look, there is a decrease based upon what we will be receiving from Office of Indigent Legal Services. We have estimated that we will have an increase in grant funding for the year 2016 due to the overlap of two grants that one is ending this year and one is beginning this next year. Their calendar does not run with ours. Theirs starts in June, so we will be receiving more money than we anticipated. Our net local share will be down approximately $36,000, like it says. We do not anticipate at this time any large high-profile crimes, but you never know. This is just a figure based upon history and the present cases that we have at the current time. There's been three major influences on our program this year. One of them has been the grant funding from the Office of Indigent Legal Services. We were supposed to receive approximately $217,000 this year. We will probably receive $300,000. Due to the fact that the two are going to overlap. This, as I said, will lower our local share. The other major influence on our program this year is that we have a third staff member in our office. We are a very small office. I am the coordinator. I have a secretary, and there is a grants and training coordinator position presently that is funded by a grant. We also have a supervising attorney, but that position is currently vacant, and they're in the process of looking for a new one. This position in such a small office has made a tremendous impact on our office. We now are able to actually work on projects. We're not always reacting to a major drug bust or, six arraignments over the weekend. We are able to look at trainings. We've had three trainings this year. We just had one last week. 65 attorneys attended. We are now able to do that with a third person in the office. The other thing that this also helps with is safety. We are in a very isolated area. There's no one around us. We deal with people who are in crisis every day. We deal with people who are mentally ill, and it is just not safe to have one person in the office. This is a grant-funded position at this time. It will probably continue that way for the next couple of years. When that runs out, or if the money does run out from oils, I will probably come back to you and ask you to make it a target request. But at this time, it is grant-funded. The other major influence on our program has been counsel at first appearance. You now all know that a lawyer is now present at every arraignment in the county at any given time, whether it be 2 a.m., 3 a.m., whether it be Christmas, Thanksgiving, whenever, there is a lawyer there. That has created a lot of work in our office. We are looking all the time to find information. We're chasing clients for applications. But even though it has caused more work in our office, it has helped in other areas such as the population in the jail because there's more people being released in their own recognizance. There, with a lawyer there present at the arraignment, there has been less people going to jail. So while it has increased the work in our department, it has helped in other areas of the government. And we think it's a good thing. Obviously, it's been very overwhelming for us, but we can't complain because it's helped our clients, and that's what we're there for. We have 3.3 full-time equivalents. The grant-funded position is the new one, and the 0.32 is a supervising attorney. The supervising attorney only works 14 hours a week, and there's been no change. There will be no change in 2016. And I have no over target requests.
Questions for Julia? Michael?
Two things, Julia. Well, no, one thing.
Okay.
I know there's been discussions about cooperation with other counties, and I wondered if you might tell us about that and whether you see any budgetary impacts on that.
There has been a lot of talk about us helping other counties. We are in talks right now with helping Schuyler County with their assigned counsel program. But other counties come to us all the time to ask them for advice on their assigned counsel programs, and we do give it to them. The only county that we're talking about working with right now is Schuyler County. They've approached us. I think that they have submitted a contract, a IMA, that's a correct term. It's something that's in review. What would happen is we would be responsible to assign all assigned cases. They have a PD, public defender, in Schuyler County. Then they have a conflict defender. And then after that, they have assigned counsel. So once it goes through the first two steps, if they can't assign that person, then it would come to the assigned counsel program. We would be responsible for that. The other thing that we would be responsible for is we would be responsible to make sure that it's in compliance, the program is in compliance with the Hurl Herring lawsuit, the five counties that were sued for ineffective assistance of counsel to poor people have to be in compliance with the Hurl Herring lawsuit, and that we would be responsible for that too. But we already meet all the qualifications of Hurl Herring with our training, our mentor, our supervising attorney, so we would just expand that to Schuyler County and just do what we do here. In fact, when we had the training last week with the 65 attorneys, we invited Schuyler County, and they all came. And it was free. They received 3.5 continuing legal education credits, had a class with Peter Gerstenzang, who is the premier attorney on DWIs in New York State, for free. And so that would be something that we would extend to them going forward. But that's about as far as it's gone. And it would probably start sometime in January.
And so there'd be revenue to your office from that?
Schuyler County is receiving revenue through the Hurl Herring lawsuit, and they would be paying us to administer that program. And they would be paying the attorneys that we assign. They would be paying the expenses for the attorneys that we assign in that county.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Carol?
We've talked over the years about the issue of whether everybody who ends up receiving being excused from reimbursement of any costs actually fit into the category, mm-hmm. and in particular whether students whose families are supporting them. Mm-hmm. There were discussions, I think, with the universities in past years. Have those discussions continued? Where do they stand? Is there any chance of increasing revenue there?
Well, we do try. If someone is under the age of 21 and they are dependent of their parent and they live in New York State, we also ask the parent for an application. And we ask them for their financial information. If they do not qualify at the end of the action, we do ask the parents to reimburse the county. We've had some success, but if the parents are out of state, such as Connecticut, Massachusetts, we do not have jurisdiction. We do not have jurisdiction to enforce a judgment outside of New York State. So usually, very rarely, there might be someone who is from out of state, but we really do not have that many students who apply.
Anyone else? Thank you, Julia.
You're welcome.
Well, let me just make one comment. With the loss of Wes and Jim coming on board, I realized that that was a huge impact personally and also on the office. And we really appreciate the job that you're doing, and we hope that. But and having Mr. Baker in the job is also a good thing, and we hope we can find somebody of the quality of Wes.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate that. It was very hard for me personally. Jim Baker has come on interimly, and he has been wonderful. Unfortunately, Jim cannot serve as the supervising attorney because he does not live in Tompkins County, but he has handled the duties admirably, and we're up and doing business. I appreciate your vote of confidence. It's been a very hard time, and I've really appreciated all of your support and all of your kind words.
Thank you. Up next is CCE. They are Chapter 5, page 6, and they have 4 OTRs, number 5 through number 8, and Ken Schlatter is here and ready to go. Welcome, Ken.
Thank you, Jim. I just wanted to pass around my presentation, if you just... Thank you very much. That's essentially it. No, this was actually a direct reference to your comment. You know, if you compare our budget request to that of DSS.
Oh, great. Okay.
So we're all done. Thank you.
I love somebody who gets it.
Yeah. All right. So we, and I can, if you prefer, I can just walk away right now. But if you want me to stick around, here's my presentation. So thanks very much for the opportunity. And also, thanks as well. The legislature has been incredibly supportive of cooperative extension, and I hope that we have demonstrated that it's worth investing in us. So thanks for being so supportive over the years. We have a 1.6% increase, as most people do for the year. Last year, 691,194. This year, 702. Much of that from last year is one time. We're asking for some one time this year. Major influences for us. There's been, basically, I just got through saying you've been very supportive, and that's true. When you look at the overall long-term trend with appropriations to cooperative extension, actually, I just went back and looked because I had some numbers from 1990, and then I went back and it turns out that over the last 25 years, there's been a 40% reduction in real dollars and a 20% reduction in real dollars over the last 10 years. We've recently, because of the changes, we've had to do some restructuring. We've reduced the number of our senior program staff from 5 to 4. The way we're structured, senior program staff are the heart of how we go about developing our programming. And as you all know, we've been doing regionalization for several years. I've seen a number of other presentations where people have talked about regionalization coming. We've been struggling. Well, I won't say struggling. We've made it through. I think it's been a successful transition to regionalization of some of our administrative functions, HR, IT, and finance. Part of the major influences also have been the consistent successes, and I've shared with you over the years, and I did give you a folder again this year with the table of numbers with lots of footnotes around that detail the value that we believe we provide to the county, and that's the numbers indicated as well. In terms of revenue saved, or I'm sorry, revenue generated, savings on the county budget, the number of the sort of the sectors that we work in the economic sectors that we work in that we believe we have some significant influence in. And then, as I've mentioned many times, people voting with their feet, the 79,000 participants, that seems to have peaked. I mean, not peaked, but we've plateaued. We've been sitting around 80,000 for the past 3 or 4 years, I think. We still have 2,000 volunteers. Our youth employment's up this year. We're over 200 people were employed, our youth, through our youth employment programs. And our leveraging, the amount of money that we leverage, has also gone up significantly. We're now basically, for every dollar you give us, it's $10 to $11 that we bring in on top of it. So the over-target requests that are supported in the recommended budget continue the effort with coordination efforts for college and career readiness, which is it's a key piece of this collective impact effort that's going on around something that's now called Cradle to Career, or Cradle to College and Career. Intention has been to have Cal Walker filling that position, and because of his cancer, we've held off on that, but we've been contracting the work out over this past year. The expectation is that Cal would come back and start work in January. And so we're continuing with that effort. The development of MyCCE, it's a website portal that we've been developing over the last 3 years. The county has provided funding in the past for this, and we've put in significant amounts ourselves as well as other associations around the state that see value in this website portal. It, we hope eventually that we can share it with the county, if for no other reason than it's a really nice way to document when people have taken some sort of a required training. It makes it really easy for people to take the training, to acknowledge that they've, to do an electronic signature, acknowledge that they've taken it, and it gets recorded immediately in a database that's really easy to find later. So for record keeping, it's excellent. We're using it, we're in the process right now. We're using it in our regionalization work, and it's actually saved us probably $7,000 to $8,000 a year on that. But the feature that we're trying to complete is an online employee expense reimbursement that will link up directly with our bookkeeping, our accounting software, and eliminating several data entry steps that have to go on in our own association. It'll save us about 4 months of labor for a bookkeeper. And so by itself here in our county, it'll pay for itself in a year. The third one is the Ag District 2 review. And this is it's a one-time, but this is a process that spans 2 years. So next year, we'll be back again asking for $2,500. It costs us a little bit more than $5,000 to do the extra work that's required in the review. Those reviews are required once every 8 years, I believe it is. And so this is, we have two reviews because there's two districts. So we'll do this review over these next 2 years, and then we'll be back 3 or 4 years down the road and ask for additional funding for that, for the review for Ag District 1. And then an over-target request that was partly supported in the recommended budget, and which we'd like to focus a little bit of time on this evening, is it's for training. This is $40,000 that we asked for, one-time money for training, and Joe has recommended $10,000. These are the staff who are paid for through the county appropriation, and then these are the staff who are paid from other sources. And these are staff. We have about 40 mid-level staff now who are doing some amazing work and have the potential. In other associations, they would be program leaders. So I'd referred earlier to the five moving from 5 program leaders down to 4. Part of the reason we can do that is because we have, as you all know, they're phenomenal people here in Tompkins County, and we've been able to attract some of those to our organization. So in other counties, these would be senior program staff. We've restructured in our structure. Our new structure is really intended to foster greater teamwork among staff across program areas to address real issues, and then also to foster more entrepreneurial efforts. And in the past, the investments for this have been very high in terms of, the rates of return on those investments have been very high. So we, as examples, I brought two here. We did a long-term grant training effort with a local grant writer, and 28 staff participated. Actually, 32. I actually recounted. There were 31 staff who participated. So you'll see that 26 of the 31 actually increased the number of their successful grants, the number of grants that they write that are successful, the grant proposals. And over the first 2 years since that training took place, our grants within the association have gone up by about $400,000. So we're at 2.3 or 2.4 million in grants that get brought in each year. And the second one is the training on fee-for-service courses. Every one of the people who've gone through fee-for-service courses that we've offered have at least doubled their fees, the revenue that they're generating from fees for service. So the intention is that we would we have a number of things that we'd like to do: social marketing and marketing in general, data mining, data analysis and data mining for more effective programming is another one. We're keenly interested in improving the way that we go about our supervision. As I said, with these 40 staff, we anticipate that quite a few of them would actually be hiring people, so we'll be doing significant amounts of supervisory training for those staff. We would want to do another grant training, a deeper grant training, grant writing training, and there's several others that I'm happy to answer questions on if you have them. And that's it. Thank you.
Will Carroll Dooley, Mike.
Thanks, Jim. So I have the pleasure of sitting on the board as does Dave, and I know you've barely begun to hint at the story that is Cooperative Extension. So there are at least two very exciting projects that the board is dealing with in terms of potential renovations to the existing building, and also another project out. And I don't know if you wanted to speak at all about that or come back and tell us about it at another time, but because I know the board, they haven't reached the point where they're completely done, but.
I'll mention both briefly. One, we've been talking expansion or some sort of change in our infrastructure for 12 years, and the latest iteration has us putting a building over a building over our parking lot. So we'll keep the parking. We'll just build over it. We would probably do pile driving at the same time that INHS does their pile driving over, and so that the neighbors only get bothered once as opposed to twice.
Or they get it in stereo.
Yes, exactly. When we do the pile driving, we'll actually be also incorporating into that ground source heat pumps. There'll be the roof will be an urban ag component, so there'll be greenhouses on the roof with some other stuff. It'll integrate with our commercial kitchen that's below, and we'll be adding a test cafe to combine some things there. So there's the expansion. In fact, the architect, we're meeting with the architect again tomorrow. The second we are in negotiations with CALS, or the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, on campus to lease the Arnott Forest Field facility, which has a lodge and 14 cabins and some other stuff. It's it's in the corner of Tompkins County, Schuyler, and Chemung County. It sits also on 4,000 acres of forest land that's managed forest land, and our intention is to use that as the basis for some of the work that's actually been identified in the county strategic plan and the region's strategic plan on improving forest management, sustainable forest management in the region. It'll also be used for expanding youth programming and adult programming in outdoor education, so primitive pursuits and other things would be included in there.
So thank you. And the other question is, talk a little more about this, the specifics of this $40,000 request. Joe's recommending 10. You sort of said the need for the training, but how would that be used? Would it be contract or a series of contracts? Or
it would be, yes, it'd be a series of contracts.
So if what does the extra $30,000 get that you've asked for get us that the $10,000 wouldn't?
Well, so the to explain, I mean the grant writing contract that we did, that by itself was $10,000. We trained, you know, 31 people. It was that training included the development of a website, the actual training itself, and follow-up support from the person involved. So these contracts are relatively comprehensive and fairly large. The social marketing, so I said the contracts we would be expecting to do, we already collect a lot of data. What we haven't done well is be systematic in looking at what messages work. We're in the education and the behavior change business, and we're looking at actually having access to a lot of data on what works and what doesn't when it comes to responses to programs that we offer. And so part of this would be to basically improve our social marketing and our behavior and our data analysis around it connected to social marketing. Another area that we didn't mention earlier is a significant effort that we'd like to do with making our association a more inclusive place for all communities, and that includes people who will be working for us. So that's some of what we would be doing with that funding.
Thank you.
Carol.
So I have two questions at the budget this year and going into the past. Because you're not a county department directly, we get your figures a little differently. So on your first slide where you talk about your the budget as a whole is $702,000, but then you turn to your first program, 4-H, and it's a $1.54 million program, of which we only pay $96,000. So if you were a department, we would be getting a consolidated budget for all your programs that gave the total picture. Maybe I just didn't scroll far enough, but can you give us some idea of your total budget out of which the $700,000?
This year it'll probably be right around $7.1, $7.2, $7.3 million.
Okay, so we're getting an awful lot more than our $700,000 worth. I appreciate that. And it might be helpful for us to have that total. And we can add it up from, does all of it, if I added up all the different programs in the book here, 4-H and commercial agriculture and forestry and went through, would it add up to that? Or do you have programs that don't even show up in our book at all?
Well, it should come close. I'm just trying to. I don't know whether I included the what we pay in benefits. So in that number, when I said the 7.1 or 7.2 number, that includes what we, you know, what staff get in benefits, the fringe benefits.
So some years you've brought us the whole budget. So if you feel comfortable doing that, Sure. You can do it or send it to us electronically. Yep. If you send the link to Kathy, she'll get it out to us. That would be helpful, I think. And then the other was under major influences, you talked about how the share from the county has essentially been reduced over the last 20 and in particular 10 years. It might be helpful for us to have a graph showing that, and maybe as a percentage of your budget, or I don't know, whatever information you think, whatever format you already have that isn't making a lot of extra work, it might be helpful for us to have in evaluating, is 30,000 additional something we can squeeze in?
Okay. I can do that, yes. And then with respect to the first part, the request for the budget, I can provide you the data for the budget for 2014. I mean, because we have I can give you the income statement for the year for 2014.
But not 15.
2015, I mean, we're not all the way through. I can give you what we've got through the year, but I just looked at through August this you know, just, but it doesn't show, I mean, it doesn't give you that number.
Yeah, no, I was just looking for the trend, since you talk about it as, you know, it's been a decline, and I assume it was a big decline.
Right. I can show that. I was referring to your first request for the total budget.
Oh, yeah, well, that's fine, too. Yeah. Thank you.
Duly.
Get a sense of the scale.
Are you able to pay everybody a living wage?
Thank you for bringing that up. I actually realized this when I closed the conversation. One thing, yes, the short answer is yes, we pay everybody a living wage. The group that we have struggled the most and worked a lot with the county on, and county services as well as Joe, have is the Rural Youth Services Program that we have. And in fact, it's probably worth noting that when we started that program in 1995, and I've had the chance to talk to Dan a little bit about this, because Dan was with that program in 1998 or 1999 as the sort of assistant coordinator and then the acting coordinator for the program. We had to, that the amount of money that was there available for, everybody agreed that this work should be done, that we should have this kind of programming after school in middle schools around the county. But the numbers weren't there actually to pay people what Cornell, so we have certain things that we are supposed to abide by with respect to our agreement with Cornell, the county's agreement with Cornell as well, by the way. And in this case, we were not able to, with the money that comes from the county and the towns, we were not able to come up with enough money to pay people at what Cornell had for their minimums, for minimum salaries, which were higher than living wage. So back in 1995, I wasn't here, the previous director and people from the county and people from the state, from cooperative extension at the state level, basically agreed to set up subcategories of the job position category that this program falls under. And these subcategories actually were paid at slightly lower levels, significantly lower levels, than what Cornell's normal minimum was. Everybody agreed it was a reasonable thing to do, and that stayed that way over the past 20 years. We've had staff basically coming to us over the past year saying, you know, their sense is this needs to change. And so, in fact, Joe has an OTR that's actually that covers that there. So that's the only group, but I'm just sort of providing some background on why that OTR that Joe put in is there. The intention is to try to make that group whole in the sense of having them become paid what the minimum pay level is that Cornell has prescribed.
Thank you. Mike?
I wasn't finished. I had another question.
Well, go ahead. You know, roll it.
This is a question to Joe. Why did you not recommend the amount?
On the training account, my perspective was we have been rather generous with cooperative extension. So in terms of OTR support that we've offered to the organization, I think it's probably the highest that we offer to any organization, and we've gotten good returns on our investments. If you look at where you've put money in cooperative extension, it's been in capacity building, so we feel good about that, and that's what the other two are. So in terms of how much we've given a substantial amount. But also, I had to think about how this reconciles with the county generally. I mean, if we were to give Cooperative Extension $40,000 in training, I have to compare that to how much we're investing in our own training. And it feels, frankly, a little out of kilter. That's why we provided some money to help with training over there, recognizing that we want to invest in training, but not as much as had been requested. I guess the third reason is I worry a bit where if organizational training becomes essentially a county responsibility, I don't know where we draw that line. And there will certainly be a lot of other organizations that we support that will come for similar funding if we were to do it here. So those are the three reasons.
Mike?
I was trying to figure out on your first slide there, the percent change, 1.6%. Didn't we allow them the 2% that we did the other agencies?
But there was one time, it's growth over an adjusted base. So when we provide one-time money, we take that out, and then we inflate because it was for one-time money. So they did get 2% on their target base.
They did get the 2% underneath. Okay. Another thing I just wanted to say, I noticed in today's paper about the new 4-H club out at 4-H Acres in Dryden, and I'm very pleased to hear about that and hope that that's indicating a real outreach, particularly to the trailer park youth in that area.
Yeah, that's one of our – that's an incredible success story, that particular program. We've had a program there. This particular program has now been there almost 10 years, and this particular iteration of it was started initially by a Cornell student who grew up in one of those mobile home parks, and she basically came to us in her freshman year and says, "I'm really interested in setting up an after school program for mobile home park kids." And now it's a partnership that we have with Cornell students. 120 Cornell students volunteer. This has been going on now for 10 years. So they basically have institutionalized this effort on their end, where they basically manage themselves. They go out and recruit new volunteers. They do fundraising for this to pay for the transportation. The town of Dryden actually covers much of the cost of the actual coordinator. We also chip in significantly for that. But the students basically train the new, they have, they train each other, they become mentors. So they've divided this up. They have divisions of responsibility. So some people raise money, some people manage the student organization, some people are mentors, some people are doing all this other stuff. And then every year they expand their programming in terms of what they do, where they've now got, they basically have kids working with youth who are 5 years old on up to 18. We've now had some people who've graduated from that program who are, some of them actually went on to college. In fact, there's a couple, I think, at Cornell.
That's great, because I think those youth in the mobile home parks, you know, whether it's in Dryden or Newfield or wherever, are often they don't have the ability to have as many services as some of the more urban children do have.
I just want to say that the County Youth Services has been incredibly supportive of that whole effort as well. So it's been a great partnership.
Can I have a question for you? Can you ballpark how much other county money you get with organizations that you contract with, that we fund and you contract with?
I want to say it's maybe half a million. No, it's less than that. It was. I was actually adding in the SNAP money that used to come to us, the SNAP education money. I think it's around 300 to 400,000.
That would be a number I would like to, if you could produce that for us and send it to Kevin, I would like that. So, and the reason I ask the question is, you roughly have a $7 million budget, so the county is essentially putting one-seventh of that, either directly or in other ways. So anyone else have any questions? Yes, Julie.
I just want to thank you. It's not really a question, for finding the time to produce the folder that includes the colored pages that explain how amazingly you handle money and give us extra leverage. So thank you for fitting that in.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ken. Good job. Up next is the Ithaca Tompkins County Transportation Council. It is on Chapter 4, page 168. They have no OTRs. And come to the microphone.
Okay. Good evening. Basically, I'll go right to the major influences. The program, as we have it right now with the Transportation Council, it's in about a sixth year of pretty much flat funding. This year's budget includes $91,000 from an ICERTA grant to do a electric vehicle charging station, develop an electric vehicle charging station plan. The money's coming to the council, but it's actually a collaborative effort with Cornell University, Ithaca College, Cooperative Extension, the City of Ithaca, and the planning department also participating in that effort. I offered to kind of manage that particular grant, so that's why it's included in our budget. And of course, we continue to, our funding continues to be at the whim of federal congressional decisions. Just today, they voted to, the Senate did vote a continued resolution through December, middle of December, so they're continuing to be funding, but it's all at very much at flat levels. And until U.S. Congress decides on a long-term transportation bill, this is the message we're getting, and this is what we should be expecting. We continue to have the same staffing. It's actually been reduced some. We have one staff member who reduced his hours. He's partially retired at this point. We're asking for no OTRs. We're 100% federally funded through a federal highway and a federal transit administration grant that come to MPOs every year. So I don't know if there's any particular questions.
Questions, Mike, go ahead.
Interested about the proposed study from NYSERDA for the EV charging.
Mm-hmm.
I know there are a few of these stations around. I have no idea how many there are in the county, but will it tell us how many there are and how many, if we were to move quicker toward electric cars, how many we would need? And where?
Yes, I mean, that is exactly the idea. There's a handful. There's about eight or nine. Somebody may have a better number, but in the county. But what we're trying to do, and it's included in the county's plan and in the long-range transportation plan of my agency, is an understanding that recognizing that in order to reduce emissions as required by the goals that have been stated, we need to have a more efficient vehicular fleet, so we need more electric cars, which is a way to help us achieve that. And the questions you're posing are exactly what we're hoping to answer. Find out what would be needed, what would be the best places, and we actually are developing a criteria tool that will help businesses and determine and municipalities determine what are good locations, specific locations, and what are the issues they need to deal with if they want to install electric vehicle charging stations.
And one other thing on that area, was your agency involved in the effort for the hydrogen fueling station, or was that
No.
Not
that's not something that we dealt with.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Anyone else? Thank you.
All right. Great. Thank you.
Kept the bus waiting, I hope.
Sorry?
Bye-bye. Aurel and Facilities, and he is here. Welcome, Aurel.
Hello.
And Facilities is Chapter 4, page 98. They have one OTR, number 21.
Good evening. So this is just a little bit about what we do at Facilities. You all know that, but just thought I'd present it for those that are not familiar with us that are viewing tonight. Highlights for this year that I wanted to share is we just completed 2 weeks ago the addition and alterations project at the Human Services Building, and the day reporting program was finally moved out of the old library to their new space at the Human Services Building. I remember back in 2000 when we moved day reporting into the old library, they said it would be temporary. That was 15 years ago. So I'm glad that we finally have a permanent home for them.
But 10 of that was trying to decide who to sell it to, so that really doesn't count.
Right. Go ahead. We're on track to complete the public safety building jail improvement project. We should be completing phase one, which is the completion of the outdoor recreation structure within the next 2 to 3 weeks. And then we move into phase two, which is doing the additional 7 beds within the existing dorm space. We're also on track to complete the court complex masonry restoration project. As you see, walking around the court complex, we've been doing exterior stairs at the main courthouse, this building here out front, and also in front of the old jail. So that should be completed in November. And we're soon to commence the mental health building, lobby and reception area improvements, as well as sixth floor area improvements. It's currently out to bid, and bids will be due October 16th. So if you're aware of any general contractors, this is a single prime contractor project. Let them know about it so that they can bid on this project. This is our 2016 recommended budget. There's a 2.5% increase. Almost that entire increase is due to some personnel changes. Joe recommended, and I've, as you know, over the past years, asked for additional staffing. And so what we've done is we've increased the hours of our cleaning staff. We have 16 cleaners that maintain all of our county buildings. And so they currently work 35 hours. We've increased their hours by an additional half hour a day. And so about 70,000 of that increase is due to increasing the hours of the cleaners. We did a reduction in staffing in our administrative services. Rather than having two administrative staff people, we currently have one. The other changes are as a result of increase in salaries. The revenue that you see there, some of it is from solid waste. It's an enterprise fund, so it's maintenance in lieu of rent. And then about $28,000 is from the airport to pay for the improvements that we did back in 2005 as part of the energy improvement project, their contribution to debt service for that project. Full-time equivalents is a reduction, basically half of a full-time equivalent, and that's what I indicated before. The administrative assistant, about a little over a year ago, we had a retirement in an administrative assistant, and I promoted the senior account clerk typist to an administrative assistant, and we basically monitored over this past year to see if we needed to fill that senior account clerk typist position, and she's been able to manage it on her own, so we basically reduced administrative staff by half position. This is the graph that I've shown for many years now that basically shows historical data for maintenance. As you see, the building area that we maintain overall has reduced slightly, and that's because we expect, my hope is that by the first quarter of next year, we sell the old library. So that's why you see a reduction in the square footage from what used to be in 2002, 415 to 396 next year. The graph in the center is our actual maintenance costs. And you see in the center that those the spikes, which was high, and that was because we were trying to accomplish a lot of the work that we're currently doing as part of our capital restoration project. So we're on average about $200,000 to $250,000 in our building repairs line item, and the bottom graph is how many square feet maintained per maintenance staff person. So that's also gone down from basically 52,000 to about 46,006 because we've reduced the number of square footage that we maintain. Still high, but it's better, it's more manageable now. This is for our cleaning staff, historical data, also as a result of a slight reduction in the amount of square feet that we maintain. The number of square feet that a cleaner cleans is about 20,000. So it's gone up from about 16,000 about 15 years ago. We only have one over-target request. It's a one-time request for a vehicle, replacement of a vehicle that's about 8 years old. It's a pickup truck that is used for maintenance as well as for snow removal operations. We have 13 vehicles, and 70% of our vehicles are over 8 years old, and 25% are over 10 years old. So we're trying to basically purchase newer vehicles so that we can do similar to what the highway division does, where they basically turn over their vehicles in 3 to 4 years at minimal cost. The focus areas for next year for our division are to complete the mental health building project that I mentioned before. We're looking at completion by mid to late March of next year. Complete re-roofing projects on the old jail, Building C, and the mental health building. We actually put it out to bid earlier, about a couple of months ago, but the bids came in higher than what we had estimated. So we're repackaging the bid and going out to bid again in November for a spring construction. We will continue with facilities restoration projects, similar to the ones that I described earlier. We're going to continue with workplace improvement projects, and those are a result of the workplace violence assessments that have been done over the last 3 to 4 years. And so we are doing several each year. And we will increase preventive maintenance. That's always a challenge for us, I think, for most maintenance operations, is we seem to be always responding to emergency and unplanned maintenance. Instead of really doing PM work, we'd rather do 70% of our time doing preventive maintenance versus and 30% of the unplanned, but it's actually the other way around. And to continue to enhance customer relations. As far as the capital facilities restoration projects, this just gives you an idea of where our focus will be over the next 3 years. This year, the main focus has been on site, the work that we've been doing around the court complex, fire alarm systems. Next year, our focus will be on re-roofing projects, one or two fire alarm system replacements, some electrical work, parking lots. Those of you that travel and park in some of our lots have seen that the last couple of winters have really made it very difficult on our parking lots, and so we're looking at replacing or resurfacing many of our parking lots next year, and some building envelope improvements as well. 2017, there's a request to, I know Joe's made a request to provide an additional $800,000 instead of having a two-year break to give us an additional $800,000 in 2017. That would be focused on HVAC system replacements. Flooring. We have some buildings like the Human Services Building built in 1997, and we have not ever replaced the carpets there. They're well overdue. The Mental Health Building as well, the old jail. So those are buildings that would need to have the carpeting replaced hopefully in 2017, and then also some elevator upgrades in 2017. The challenges ahead, as always, is basically allocating limited, human resources to in the most cost-effective and efficient manner so that we can continue to maintain our county buildings and retain and enhance customer satisfaction. We're always feeling like we're barely keeping our head above the water. I'm not sure if our customers know that or realize that, but we do our best with the staff that we have to accomplish all the maintenance we have in our county facilities. The last one, as I said, about increasing preventative maintenance as opposed to being overcome with unplanned and emergency maintenance efforts.
Any questions for Rel? Mike Klein. And then Peter Stein.
I've got three, actually. I brought this up with another department. Our cooling towers and Legionnaires' disease, how do we protect against that?
We've been treating our towers for 18 years. We have a vendor that services them monthly, and we put biocides in the towers. Not all our buildings have cooling towers. The closest is actually the old library and the Human Services building. If you look up at the top of the Human Services building, when you're driving down Seneca, you'll see the cooling tower on top. And so we put biocides that kill bacteria in the sump, where you have water in the sump, and then we have it tested on a monthly basis when we run the cooling towers. Also, the state required that we register our towers, so that was done probably a month ago, and we communicate with the health department, Liz Cameron, as far as the requirements that the state is imposing on businesses and public building owners for cooling tower registration and testing.
Thank you. You talked about the possible parking lot improvements. Would that also include the upgrade at the health department so we get the bus down there?
That's actually a separate project that is on the capital plan, but yes.
And the last one, Office of Court Administration, are they satisfied with what they've got over there now, or are they starting to pressure for more changes?
Well, we are live, right? So, let's see, how can I put this? What the courts have told us is that they do plan to follow through with their plan. We did a space study about four or so years ago. So they do plan to follow through with what was proposed in that study in phases once they have enough funding to do that. So, yes, they are planning to do further improvement.
They want us to follow through with their plan, right?
Right, right. Right. Well, they reimburse us to the maximum level possible. We did the improvements on the basement of the main courthouse, about 2 years ago. So we did get reimbursement. It wasn't 100%. It was probably 90% reimbursement for those improvements. We had to front the money and manage the construction project. So, yes, there is a phase two that they've been talking about. And it's likely that they may be doing some design work next year, but no construction as of yet.
I continue to be concerned that at some point we're going to need to move the county clerk's office out of there.
I mean, that space was never shown in the study as space that they wanted to occupy. It's basically since they vacated the circuit clerk space, so now they want to make improvements there for, I think it's the support court or family treatment court that would go into that space. So at this point, they're not asking for additional space.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Peter Stein.
I have a general question that I guess is addressed to Joe. A couple of places I noticed that there were OTRs for replacing vehicles. Mm-hmm. And I wondered, does that really make sense? I mean, we all know that vehicles deteriorate and that there's a point where it's more expensive to maintain them than it is to buy a new one. And it doesn't matter what department they're in. I wonder why we don't do that, why that just isn't some kind of a routine decision that's made for the best financial outcome.
When vehicle purchases are intermittent, So, for example, I don't know how many years a rail hopes to get out of this truck, maybe five, maybe six. So you don't build up that ongoing recurring expenditure if the vehicle is only going to be purchased once every 5 or 6 years. So that's why we will often use one-time money as opposed to recurring target money for vehicle purchases. Now, what you heard Mike Hall talk about and Jeff Smith talk about the other night was really moving toward a different approach on vehicles, that as we see how it works, we may want to extend it, and that's a quick turn. So you buy a vehicle, we can buy vehicles very inexpensively on these mass biddings that happen, and then before they're off warranty, before they begin to incur real costs, you get rid of them, and you buy another one, and you almost break even on that transaction. So, Peter, the day may come when you see more vehicles being purchased in these budgets, and if that happens, it's because we found that we can save the county a lot of money in doing it that way. But for the moment, in the case of a rail's budget, and some others, it's an intermittent vehicle purchase, so we don't believe we should be including recurring target money every year to buy vehicles if you only need it once every 5 years.
So it's because we have this target system.
Please use a mic, Peter.
Yeah. Well, you wouldn't want to raise taxes. So you wouldn't want to raise taxes every year for items that you're not going to be buying that year. Police. One of the things that you saw in the sheriff's office is we're beginning to move more toward recurring funding for vehicles. You got to buy them every year, and there's not rollover much of it anymore, so it makes sense to build that into your ongoing baseline budget. That makes sense. This is a little different in that he doesn't buy many vehicles, you know, on a regular basis. So you bring the money out of the bank, you pay for it as a one-time, and then you're not raising taxes for something that you're not going to be buying.
Okay, thank you.
Carol.
Yeah, two questions. Without refighting any battles or anything, I'm just looking for what would the impact on your budget be if the city schedule for review of the old library site is, I haven't seen anything about it, and tomorrow's October 1st. You know, if that slips half a year or whatever it is there an impact on your budget? Is one question.
Well, I figured in my budget that we would own it 4 months into next year. Okay. So hopefully that's accurate. Since the building is vacant, I mean, it's not occupied, our intent is to winterize it. So, I mean, the biggest savings is by reducing utility, you know, heat and electric. We would still have to, since we own the building, we would still have to maintain the fire alarm system. So, and a few other things, service contracts. We wouldn't have to dump any garbage. So the service, the cost would be minimal once we winterize the building. And since it's vacant, that's our plan to do.
Okay. And then the other has to do with energy improvement savings. I see you have HVAC overhaul for the following year, but where do we stand with Johnson Controls and any potential continued improvement in our energy use or savings from energy use? I'm so happy to not be sitting here freezing, which I was all summer, and I don't know if that had to do with balancing other rooms throughout the same building, but both here and in the old jail. I always had to bring a sweater, and I think other people did too. So are we continuing a program of trying to save money that by?
We are, but I think, as I said before, any energy improvement projects that we look at moving forward are more renewable type energy projects, which are much more expensive. We did a lot of the low-hanging fruit back in 2005, 2006 by doing lighting retrofits, sealing building envelopes, upgrading our controls. We've done over the last recent years photovoltaic panels, Solar Liberty, so we have seven buildings with photovoltaic panels. We have the library. We're buying RECs credits, renewable energy credits for 100% of our electric purchases. Any new project that we do as part of our green building design, we make improvements in energy. So those of you that have or will visit the Human Services building, the portion of the building that we did the addition, so the Bevlisi conference room, if you go there, Adal Sadeh reporting, the lights are LED lights. They're really neat. They're our first building with LED lights. So those types of improvements we're making as we do, you know, renovation projects. But really, at this point, looking forward, it would have to be a renewable type project. And I know that the county is looking at that and doing renewable energy type projects. But aside from that, we don't have any planned major energy improvement projects, you know, looking forward.
Anyone else? Dooley.
I second Carol's statement about the need for bringing a sweater to our meeting rooms in the summer because it's so hot outside and so cold inside. And I don't think you would count that kind of change as a renewable energy project, but it's certainly something that we ought to be serious about changing. So my questions, I wondered how you go about repackaging the roofing bids. What do you change?
Well, we actually spoke to the low bidders, the three low bidders, to ask them why their numbers were high. And they expressed one was schedule. We gave them limited time at our mental health building because it's we didn't want them to take up a lot of space in the parking lot. But afterwards, based on some of the comments, we talked to Frank Krupa and said, hey, if we basically for 2 months took over the parking lot and paid for parking at a garage, thereby giving contractors, you know, the entire parking areas for staging, would that reduce costs? And they said yes. We also had given them a brief window because for the mental health building, for instance, we would have to remove all the roof top HVAC equipment, which is cooling tower, which would mean that for a period of time, the occupants would not have any cooling. So then we were scheduling the work during the kind of that shoulder months between winter and spring where you don't need cooling. So these types of improvements are going to reduce cost. Here we've done the same thing at the old jail, which we're going to be doing roof replacement. We didn't give them any of the parking on either side. This time we are, and we'll do the same thing, provide parking either off-street by renting meters or at the garage so that they have good access. Also, on the roof, on three of the, well, actually all of the building roofing projects, we had ancillary work like door replacements, some masonry improvements. We decided to remove all of that and make it strictly roofing project. And so between now and when they would do the work, we're going to do those things either ourselves or with a contractor that specifically does either masonry or door repairs. So by doing that, we feel that when we go out to bid again, the contractors are only focusing on roofing, not having to worry about electrical, about mechanical system replacements, getting a crane. So our feeling is that we will get much more competitive pricing. Also, contractors, when we go out to or put this project out to bid in the winter, they're looking for work in the spring. So we feel we're going to get very competitive prices in the spring.
Thank you for being willing to go into that level of detail. That was really...
I can do some more, but you know me. I'm an engineer. Give you as much detail as you'd like.
I have heard interest from, I don't remember if it was assessment or IT, but someone in Building C who hoped there could be an outlet for a plug-in vehicle over there. Is that something that you would handle, or would that be somewhere else?
I know that assessment has approached us, and I've basically forwarded that to our assistant director to look at. It would be something that we would do, but we have to look at the feasibility of doing that first. If we've got, I think it's three-phase, 270 or 480, I can't remember what voltage Jay was looking at. And if we have to spend a lot of money to do that, we probably would ask the department to help fund that. because we consider that an improvement. That's not an existing electrical system that we're having to maintain. So it's something that we'd like to do. We just, as I said, I'm not aware if the assistant director is how far along he's gotten on that.
So were that to want to be acted on this coming year, it would have to be an OTR, or it would have to come out of contingency?
For us, you're saying?
Or for assessment. There's no project yet. It's too late for this next year's budget, I guess.
Well, I mean, if it's something that, as I said, I haven't spent any time on that, but Alan from our office may have done so. If it's something that's fairly simple, I mean, if it's we have that phase power readily available in that location, we would probably just do it. But if it's much more involved, where we have to get a separate distribution panel and such, then we would probably still do it and then look to be reimbursed, maybe a year later from the department.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else? Thank you very much, Arel.
You're welcome.
Up next is TCAT. I notice all the players are here. It is Chapter 5, page 62, and OTR number 64. Please approach the bench.
Good evening. My name is Bill Gray. I'm the chair of the budget committee for TCAT. I brought all sorts of reinforcements, so feel free to ask any questions. I have Alice Eggleston, the executive director, Rick Andrasik, the controller, and Frank Proto, who seems quite comfortable in that chair, is our chair for the board. Presentation's fairly short. I'll go through it, but we are asking for more money, so we're prepared to answer any questions. These numbers are your numbers, not ours. Our budget for 2016 is approximately $13.6 million. I believe these are the federal and state dollars that you handle because you are the recipient, and then you pass that money through to us. I would tell you that the local number for the county is actually 829, not 819, so I'm not quite sure where these numbers come from. But it's been 829 for approximately the last 7 years, and so. But that is the number that we expect is the 0% pass through to us. So, with that, the major influences we deal with. The contribution, the note here says the contribution has remained flat from 2010 through 2015. That would be 6 years, but actually it's the same number as 2009, so it became flat in 2010. The number has been $829,000 for 7 years. Like probably all of the things that the county owns, we own a lot of capital goods. They need a lot of attention. In our cases, it's mostly buses traveling millions of miles. And we have, in round numbers, 48 buses out every day. A bus lives about 12 years, so you should be replacing 4 buses a year at, I think, $420,000 or $450,000 is the current number. You're looking at over $1.7 million in buses consumed every year. Like the county, we don't do depreciation accounting, so that doesn't show up in our operating budget. But it has become a problem because the uncertainty of funds coming to us, the highway trust fund that I think has now been extended 30 times in the last 6 years, rather than create a four-year or a six-year highway trust fund, they've just extended it months or weeks at a time, and we've gone through the last one. But it creates serious problems for us in terms of knowing where our money's coming from and constructing budgets. The grant money that comes through that is flexible from state sources has now largely been converted in. It's flexible in that it could be used for either capital expenditures or for operating expenditures, is now almost completely converted to operating expenses. And so our ability to respond to surprises has been decreasing. The fact that our buses have gotten substantially older because the Highway Trust Fund has not come through and not been renewed with a multi-year approach has resulted, I think, the current age of our fleet is about 10 years. And if you have 48 buses on the road and you replace four of them every year, ideally your average age of your fleet should be 6 years for a 12-year, for buses that last or are replaced every 12 years. So our aging fleet is costing a lot of money, and that shows up in the operating budget because it's not being spent because we don't have the capital dollars. So those are the major influences on what we've been dealing with. And as a consequence, when we constructed our budget, I guess I should back up for a second. In the 7 years, 2009 to 2015, that the county, the city, and Cornell's contribution has remained flat, our ridership has gone from 3.3 million to 4.3 million. And our budget's gone from 12.2 million to this year's 13.6. We've been able to make that work, but the current budget that we're looking at for 2016 ends up with a $310,000 shortfall. The first approach was to take that shortfall and divide it among our underwriters. That is the $103,000 for three parties, Cornell, the city, and the county, which would balance our budget. Taking that approach, we are here before you asking that the $829,000 be increased to $932,000 for next year. In round numbers, and it is a product of many things, but among them the fact that the contribution has been flat for the last 7 years while we've been making money and our budgets work in other ways. And I think that completes
questions for the TCAT folks. Mike, go ahead.
While the sponsorship has been level, you haven't mentioned that I heard the mortgage tax that we authorized, which was a substantial increase to TCAT, and which hopefully is going to be used for purposes of TCAT, including capital, including operation. And also, aren't you in line to get about 10 buses this year?
We are in line to get, five ordered this year. We will be ordering, I think, another.
Yeah, I'll answer the bus question. We do have five buses that are currently being built. They're due to be delivered on or about August 1st, 2016. We also are hopeful to order 10 more buses. We're waiting on the grant approval. And once we have the grant approval, then we'll be able to execute that order. It takes 18 months to build the bus approximately. So if we order it in October of this year, we will see those buses April of 2017. However, that doesn't get us out of the woods because right behind there, we got 12 more buses that will be coming up on beyond their useful life. So we still have another big pile of buses that are going to need replaced. And I just want to follow on to this discussion because of the importance of having rolling stock and having the stock available. We had a expert maintenance assessment done, and the preliminary report says that given the level of service that we provide, which is really exceptional for a city of this size or a county of this size, our buses, halfway through their useful life, have 500,000 miles on them. And basically the maintenance experts said that's really unbelievable with regard to the amount of miles on the buses. And what that really says is those buses should receive full overhauls at that point in time. So what I'm saying is our buses really are go through the mill and wear and tear. And so that is a very large expense for the amount of service that we provide Tompkins County to keep those buses rolling.
We do appreciate the mortgage recording tax funds being attributed to us. It was our understanding that we would largely be using that for capital dollars. I'm talking about the operating budget now and its shortfall, but we have a parallel five-year projection for our capital budget, and it actually has a several million-dollar hole in it, even when we use the mortgage recording tax in that projection. Again, a lot of this has to do with the fact that we don't know what federal dollars will be coming our way over the next 5 years because there is not a multi-year highway trust fund. For the last 20 years, most of the bus, a large part of the capital dollars, mostly buses, has come out of the highway trust fund. So we're here not knowing actually how the next several years will pull together. And so we have attributed the mortgage recording tax to our capital budget, and we have a multi-million dollar shortfall there. If we don't get the money that we're asking for, and we not only have to request it from the county, we have to request it from the city and from Cornell. If we don't get that $310,000, the likely place for it will be the mortgage recording tax. The only other place that we have direct control is the rate that we charge our riders, and we would prefer not to be changing that this year. The ridership has dropped off slightly and is now starting to climb back out. We don't know whether that's attributable to the drop in fuel prices or exactly what's happening. So we've done our best job constructing a budget, and so we're here talking about the operating budget.
If I could, one more thing, and that is on the ridership fees. How much more do you expect to get from Cornell with the renegotiation of its amount that it pays?
Well, yes.
Remember, we're getting, over the course of the Cornell fiscal years, the increase will be 500,000, total increase will be 500,000, and it will come up to about, the total will be about 3 million, and that'll be by 2018. Because we receive the dollar amount from them, it's based on their fiscal year. We received the first $125,000. That'll cover the period July 1 to December 31 of this year. And then the next $125,000 will be January 1 to June 30 of 2016. And then it drops to about $62,000 And that's spread over until the whole $500,000 is paid. Now, you got to remember, too, that there was quite a discussion about the unpaid, and I know this raised some hackles with the university. The university, it represents about 70% of the total ridership. And for a number of years, the university, and this is not a slight towards David Howe and the university, but they underpaid the amount, and it caused some fiscal strain. And as part of the negotiation on the MOU, I chaired the committee that met with Cornell to negotiate the MOU that was successful in dealing with President Scorton and Joe Molina, some of the players, you know. But we had to give up on collecting any of the unpaid money. After this new arrangement is consummated, is finished, we have to have another piece of this MOU in place that takes us into the future. And right now, I've communicated with Q Wang, who is the head of the vice president in charge of facilities, because we want to begin that negotiation now, because we don't want to be surprised at the end of 2016 that we don't have something in place to pick up from 2018 forward.
But what I'm asking is, how much new money will you have in the 2016 budget from this renegotiation?
$125,000.
Okay, thank you.
That's it.
Bill, I have a couple of questions, maybe three. What kind of a fund balance have you been running over the last couple of years? And let me just make a statement. $100,000 that is the ask here, and essentially you're asking us, the county, or Cornell, and the city of Ithaca. And I don't know if you know it or not, but the city last week was over here asking us for $30,000 for their parks. So, you know, I'm not talking about their fiscal situation at all, but, you know, when they come to us and ask for park money, are they going to come to us and ask for some of this money? You don't know that, but, you know, it's a tough ask, I think, at this point. But I'm more interested in what your fund balance have been right now and over the past couple of years, if you can answer that.
I can, but I'll ask Rick. He's got sure. The numbers in front of him.
It's projected at the end of 2016 to be $2,000,008.
That's your fund balance?
That's projection for 2016.
Okay, and then year-end surpluses, do you have that number? You know, over the last 2 or 3 year budgets?
I've got the projected for 2015 will be $668,000.
And that would end up in your fund balance?
Right. That ends up in that $2,000,007.
Okay.
But the biggest part of that saving is in the fuels, everybody knows.
And could I ask one other question about your capital fund balance to buy buses? What's the bus cost? $500,000?
About $425,000.
I'm sorry?
Figure $450,000.
Okay, $450,000. And how much do you have in that balance now in your capital balance to buy buses?
We don't carry a balance. Well, we got carried over from the partners, our sponsors.
Your capital, you must have some money to buy the buses. How much do you have?
It's all coming from grants. The biggest part, the 10 buses that we're talking about, it's relying on the grants that will come through October. We've got a 5311 grant.
Okay.
5307 grant, and our funding share, correct?
Local
funders.
And my final question is, the rate to ride the bus is $1.50, right? Am I correct in that?
Yes.
Okay. And when was the last time we raised the rate?
Never.
Was that when it... when the rural and the...
There was a bifurcation in the rate, too. Remember the 250 and the 150, okay. If you were outside a certain
right.
range. But it's 3 or 4 years ago, if I recollect.
2012.
Jim, can I address
Absolutely,
something
Frank.
You asked? Please, the 10 buses, these magical 10 buses, those are relying on the feds approving the 5311 and the 5307 money. They can't even decide on a transportation bill, for heaven's sakes. We're waiting. Tomorrow's October 1st. There's no guarantee we're going to get that money. And if we do, as Alice explained, we're looking at 2018 before those buses, or 2017. 2017 before we even get into, we have to get into the queue to order the buses. That's one thing. But just as Michelle helped us set up a meeting with TCOG at their request, and we met, the executive committee met with them last month, and TCOG has a request for more service in Lansing, more service at TC3, and as Dan knows, there's a request, a continuing request that some that was started when I was sat around this table, and Dan, thank goodness, picked up on it, to increase service to West Danby. So there's a continuing need for more service. And we're struggling with buses that, what does an engine repair cost? $5,000?
Engine replacement of an engine is around $11,000, $12,000 to replace an engine.
And the transmissions on these hills are getting eaten alive. So while I appreciate what Mike said about the mortgage recording tax, that's sadly, that's been nice to have, but it doesn't fill the whole gap. It really doesn't. And it's a concern, or else we're looking at the potential for reducing service. I hate to break that news, but that's one of the options that we're looking at, which nobody wants to address.
Yeah, Bill.
Mike, you apparently did a little homework, so you knew to ask some questions that I...
I'm Jim.
Jim, I'm sorry. Sorry. About the surplus in this particular year, mostly a large part of that in fuel, that has been taken out of next year's budget, so we don't expect that to be recurring. And with the growth in the fund balance that results from that, what you can call a surplus, that is money we won't have spent this year, we actually show the cash flow in next year's budget does not go negative. In other words, we actually can write all of our checks during the year. We don't have to go to the county or to Cornell and ask for prepayments on money. So the fund balance will have struck a level at which we can operate and pay our own bills. The other thing that I would point out is that the money that we appear to be saving this year is actually services we're not providing. We're talking about cutting service. We have been short on staff. Being short on staff results in stresses that have resulted in even more staff departing. And we need to be spending the money, not saving it. It shouldn't be showing up in surplus. We need those drivers. We need those mechanics. And we're setting out in next year's budget to see that we have the money and and spend it so that we can provide the service that we're here to provide for the city, the county, and Cornell.
Martha Robertson, Peterstein, then Will.
Thank you. I'm not sure. Is your overall operating budget about $8 million? I'm looking at the...
Our overall operating budget for next year is 13.6, I believe.
13.6.
The money you see in front of you are the federal and state dollars that pass through the county and pass through to TCAT. There are other funds, that is, the direct revenues that we handle that don't pass through the county. So your numbers are slightly different from our overall operating budget.
Okay. So the overall operating is 13.6. So if your fund balance is 2.8, right? So is that...
Well, I mean, that number includes about $500,000 in parts. because we have to put the value of the part somewhere. It's not dollars we can spend. It's more like 2.2, I think.
I presume that those are parts you need and would otherwise buy if you didn't.
Right.
Yeah, the cat. If you didn't have the parts, you'd be spending it. So it's the same as cash.
Yes, but I don't think of it as fund balance in that it's not spendable, but yes, they are parts that we need. There's a spare motor sitting on the floor. There are tires and other things in the inventory.
Okay, so is that about a 25% fund balance? The quick math, somebody.
Against your $8 million?
No,
$13 million. $2 million against $8?
You know, almost $3 million out of 13.6 is 20-25%, something like that.
Oh, 2 out of 13 would be
6.
What?
On the 2.8 is about 20%.
20%.
If you take the full 2.8, yeah.
20%. Okay. And Rick, I didn't catch your number of the surplus you project for the end of this year. What was that?
Back in when we did the presentation, it was about $670,000.
Okay. And I understand about not recurring. Frank, I got really confused about the Cornell money, and Peter actually made a presentation at the planning committee. So there are three years that were increases in their share when negotiated, right?
Yes, it goes from, I think, $2.6 million to $3.1 million. It's about a $500,000 increase over the next several years. Annually, it goes up.
In increments.
So the total increase you're going to get over the three years is $500,000. And you don't know whether that's going to be renegotiated. You don't know where that's going to go after that?
Well, hopefully, Martha, at the end of 2018 or at the end of Cornell's fiscal year in 2018, mm-hmm. June 30, we will then be at receiving from Cornell about $3.1 million, which includes the increases up to the $500,000. And that's the piece is the part that needs to be negotiated into the future. That's why I said we have to begin this second part of the MOU negotiation.
How much per ride is that? Did you figure that as how much per ride? As a dollar a ride?
It's very close to that number.
Close to a dollar a ride.
Okay.
It's pretty good. And by the way, let me make one correction. Mike asked how much money we were going to receive from Cornell in 2016, and I gave you a number of $125,000. That's the part that represents their fiscal year ending June of 2016. Then there's a $62,500. That goes from July 1 to December 31 of 2016. So next year from Cornell, during their fiscal year, we should get about $187,000 from them. Not the one. It's more than the $120,000. Sorry about that.
For our calendar year, it's $187,000.
$125,000 in our calendar. Their year ends July 1st.
Right, but I thought you said first between January 1st and June 30th, it's going to be
125,
and then July 1st to December 31st, another 62. Okay. Thank you.
Are you done?
Martha? Yeah, I'm done.
Peter Stein, followed by Will, and then Carol Trott. Go ahead, Peter.
Yeah, I'm in the unfortunate position of when I use the word we, it can either be the county legislature or it can be TCAT. But I think it's pretty simple. I mean, you can ask a lot of questions as to where the money goes, but there's no profit here in the operation. Money comes in from sources that we can explain, and it goes out also that we can explain. And we could have a lower fund balance, but we are at a point where at a fund balance, which at some time in the year we can no longer pay our bills. If that time gets shorter, if we have a higher fund balance, and it gets longer if we have a lower fund balance. The fact of the matter is that nobody knows, we don't know exactly what Cornell is going to do 2 years from now. That's something to be negotiated. I think we're assuming something that's reasonable, that it will be extending the same formula that it's using now into the future, but that may not be the case. There's a lot of uncertainties. But the fact is that when we make an extrapolation into the future, assuming something about gas prices, assuming this, assuming that, assuming what Cornell is going to do, we end up in a very bad situation where we no longer have enough money to operate.
Pierre, excuse me. Just to follow along what I've done for five meetings, I really want a question in there somewhere.
Yeah, well, there's no question. So I just felt like I wanted to put myself, say a few words, and the we that's belonging to the. If you don't want that, I'll stop. But I mean,
go ahead.
How
you might as well.
I see it, huh?
Go ahead. You're there.
What I see looking at this thing is that the numbers that are calculated mean that we're going to run into very serious trouble in a relatively short time unless we get an additional source of money. And that will surely translate into having less service for the community. That's the situation.
Okay. Thank you. Will.
Thank you, Jim. I'm trying to understand this request, what it means if we decide to go with the requested OTR. And I think what I understand is that it would only come to be if Cornell and the city did the same. Am I right in that understanding?
That's correct.
Okay. I guess I would like to hear from Joe your thinking as to why you felt you could not support it, and what your recommendation would be as an alternative.
Well, my recommendation is up there. And I think some of the things that have been said tonight were the kinds of things that I thought about. And I certainly don't want to diminish the policy conversation that's happening here. But my thought was the county had just increased the mortgage recording tax a few years ago, which drove $700,000 of new revenue, not restricted. I know we've talked about whether it should be allocated for capital or not, but it wasn't restricted. So that was $700,000 in new money. That combined with what will ultimately be $500,000 from Cornell was another stream of revenue that I thought about. So looking at those things, it was my sense that they could get by with the amount that was already being provided through the partners through the $819,000 or $829,000 apiece. So that was kind of my thinking. The other thing, I had looked at recurring surpluses there, and I think there were some good answers tonight about the source of at least the most recent ones of those being gasoline. But there has been a consistent generation of surpluses in TCAT. So those were the three things that were on my mind when I came to this recommendation.
Okay. And what I heard, Bill, you say that if this is not given by the county and is matched by the city and Cornell, that your only alternatives would essentially be to be raising fares or dipping into the mortgage recording tax. What does that mean in terms of what you can't do? I understand if you raise fares, presumably some people, potentially fewer people will ride the bus, and that hurts the community. What does it mean if you reduce the mortgage the fund from the mortgage recording?
Well, I guess in order to bring the budget in line, either we take money out of the mortgage recording tax, we'd have to raise rates, or we'd have to give up one bus. And none of them are good for reasons we've discussed.
The buses, we've got a serious problem now, and we can't go backwards on that. We've got 30 buses over the next 3 or 4 years that we've got to replace. And the mortgage recording tax presents a problem in the five-year capital budget. So what Joe has said to you is accurate. By the same token, we're looking at 5 years worth of budgets, and we know we have a problem. And this is our recommendation on trying to keep us in line. If we don't get this money, the possibility is a bus, the possibility is a reduction in service, the possibility is we just take it out of the mortgage recording tax. We'll have to look at all those things. We actually are having problems, as you discussed, we're showing a surplus for this year. We're trying to get the mechanics, the bus drivers back on so that we don't have to cut service. There are a lot of things going on right at the moment, and so depending on what you do, and I guess it's not tonight, but as you adopt your budget, and as Jim has indicated, we'll end up in front of the city. And so if the city is here looking for money, maybe we're going to have the same, Jim's intimated we're going to have the same or a bigger problem there. So we're just telling you now, and for me, this balances our budget. If we don't get this money, we'll still set out to provide the service. We will strike a different kind of deal. But we're over the next several years, you will see us back, and this problem will not have gone away. It just changed form.
Thank you.
Carol, and then Dan.
I should say one more thing. This TCAT, now that I've been on the board for a period of time, and that has sent me off to look at other systems, TCAT is actually in an unusual position. We're one of the few systems I know that have underwriters. The city and the county still participate because we took over their systems. And if we didn't, of course, our rate structure would have to be different. The level of service would have to be different. We're a lucky system in that we get to sit in front of you and tell you what we want, and you get to tell us what we're going to get. But we're very lucky that we have the city, the county, and Cornell participating at an underwriting level. Very few systems have that, and we appreciate it greatly.
And in response, I think we as a community are lucky to have a service that's as good as TCAT. So
we didn't.
And that's not by accident.
We didn't drag all the statistics out that we presented. TCAT is an unusual system, and we're the city, the county, and Cornell get great service.
I absolutely know that, even though I am not on a route and rarely get a chance to use it personally, but I really appreciate that it is here for the community.
Carol.
Not to rain on the parade here.
We're talking about money.
We are talking about money. And I think yes, we're lucky to have the level of service that we do. But obviously the frustration in the room and over this topic for quite a number of years now has been palpable because we do have high ideals that we need, an even higher level of service. We need to get people out of cars, and we all hold that as an ideal. And if we don't, there's other costs to pay that we all pay. And so while we deserve credit for having kept this system going as long as we have with the MOU we had, it's pretty clear that a system that doesn't have a budget change in 7 years, that doesn't have any rate increases, it's not sustainable. When the cost of buses goes up and the federal government, keeps abdicating its responsibility to people to get us out of our cars, and it just seems like we can keep doing what we've done and have the frustration rise and rise and explode. And
Carol, excuse me, I interrupted Peter, and okay. I really would. I'm looking for a question.
So the question was raised about. The questions I have is what. How many years in the future do you see coming back with the partners and all the pieces of this, as frustrating as it is, and saying something's got to change, something's got to give? How many years ahead? I don't think that's going to happen in this year's budget process to really get us where we'd like to be as a community. Somebody tonight raised the question of the city share compared to the county share. That's the first thing that I hear as a city rep. When people from the city complain that they pay twice for a service, once in their county taxes and once in their city taxes for the same service, that's tops the list. There are other towns who aren't putting in. There's rates. So how many years ahead is it possible?
Carol, please excuse me. I really would like a question, okay?
Well, one question that I have is how many years ahead, can we say as a goal, by 5 years from now, we're going to have sat down and renegotiated so that we've got a more sustainable budget?
Thank you.
That's one question. I have another question that's a smaller question.
I will take the first stab at that answer. There may be more answers around me. I would tell you that the group that has backed away the furthest and the one that owes the most is the federal government at this point. If we are to maintain the system under the funding program that has existed for the last 25 years. And my feeling in terms of the number of years is that if we don't get a highway trust fund before the end of this year, we won't get it next year during the election tug of war. And so we'll end up waiting at least a year and a half or 2 years to find out whether they will step up with the money that will solve our large capital issues and allow our operating budget to stabilize and not grow. So if your question is how many years, I would tell you if it doesn't happen in 6 months, it'll be 2 years before we know where we stand. And I think that the local community does its fair share. But we're trying to solve a problem with all the unknowns, and that's why we're here tonight telling you that we're looking for another 103,000.
Okay.
Question two.
Well,
go ahead.
Are you asking the other partners to do this as well?
Yes.
We'll have to. If all three don't agree, it doesn't happen. I think Will raised that, or maybe Mike did earlier. But there's another clarification that has to be made, and it goes back to something Joe, I don't disagree with Joe too often, but I need to clarify this. The $500,000 that is additional money from the university is not, that's not a windfall. When we started the negotiations with them, it became, one of the reasons is they were getting $3.1 million worth of service and paying $2 million for the service.
$2.6
million for the service. So over a period of years, they represent 71% of the total ridership. So this is like catch-up money. And it's not as if we had to make up shortfalls in TCAT for those years that there was an underpayment. So it sadly, we were not able to get them to catch that up. But President Scorton was understanding, and going forward, we have this piece of the MOU in place now, so that at least going forward until 2018, we will get some of this money to make up for the ridership, what it costs to provide that ridership.
Oh, we do understand that.
Carol, you're one of the individuals that I
yes,
remember
that first.
Being
yes.
very staunch.
Yes.
About
although I'm not looking to either assign blame or I'm looking more to move forward. My other question has to do with the fund balance. Is there an accounting standard in the field or a funder recommendation or requirement, from the federal government? We have requirements that we have to maintain a certain, our fund balance has to be a certain percentage of our budget. What's the standard in this field?
It's not a requirement, but our auditor has recommended 15%.
At least 15%.
If you take that fund
so the 20 is
500,000 is tied up in inventory. We're close to that 15. We're a little bit above right now.
Thank you.
Oh, Dan Klein. First time. I think you get a ribbon. It's the first question I've heard from you.
What color ribbon was that?
Blue.
Thank you. So the city's proposed budget comes out, I think, tomorrow. So I guess we'll hear if they have anything to say about this to start with. I'm wondering about the Cornell part of it. Is there what's the process that you're going through to ask Cornell? And is there any kind of schedule about when they might make a decision on funding? Extra $100,000.
I don't have an exact date. We have approached them informally. My understanding, though it's not signed, is that Cornell will probably go along if the other two parties agree. They get to stand in the background or for the moment because the city and the county have a very public process. They don't. Our formal request was made at the end of July, which is when, under the agreement, we make a presentation to representatives of the city, the county, and Cornell, and this information was included. We did basically had two scenarios, which were either the parties would agree to fund the roughly $300,000 shortfall, $100,000 each, or we would probably have to make that up with the coming out of the mortgage recording tax. We have a longer way to go to know how our funds will actually come at us. The Highway Trust Fund is the largest single divide, and then we would try and balance our local rates to make up the rest of the local money. We prefer to hold that steady because it keeps more people on the bus. But if necessary, our rates will have to go up or our service will have to be adjusted or other. We will balance the budget. Another part of the agreement that created TCAT, which doesn't come up very often, is the city, the county, and Cornell agreed to cover any deficits we create. Well, the object is not to create them, and so we not only look at next year's budget, we look 5 years out, and this is the product of looking through the fog. This is what we came up with.
So I just wanted to ask a little more about the Cornell part of the process. Are the Cornell representatives to the TCAT board unanimous in making the same request to Cornell parallel to what you're doing here?
I would tell you they all support what we are doing. They are aware, and the board sent us forward with this request. So in that sense, yes, they're unanimous.
Thank you.
And Martha.
Thank you, Jim. So the fund balance, even if you take out the inventory, which is questionable, you're still at 16%. The county's target fund balance is 10%. Correct? So it's a little hard, and we've been working with the library, with other agencies that really spend down their fund balance when they have a shortfall. And, you know, it's not wise, but, you know, we're there when they've gone way below a target, but not when they're above the target. So we're above our target. So I and nevertheless, I do feel that we really have to increasingly rely on public transit if we're ever going to meet our greenhouse gas emissions goals, so this is important. However, it's really hard to see about a request that large from property taxpayers when our fund balance is well below yours as a percentage. Well, I don't really accept the idea that the only alternative you have is to raise fares or...
I get it, and I sat through...
Excuse me, Bill. To be fair, Martha, do you want to ask Bill a question?
What do you think about that?
I understand the point, and we have discussed this. I sat through lots of city budgets and saw the fund balance discussion around the 15% recommended. I think that our fund balance is a product, or our desired fund balance is a product of the seasonality of our service and the fact that we go through very large fluctuations in the inflow and the outflow of money, requiring a larger fund balance than would be ideal.
You know, don't we pay your bills up front? And so, you know,
you do, but the city pays, I think, in thirds or in quarters, and Cornell pays on a monthly basis. But it still means that our cash flow, the money available to write checks for the bus drivers and the mechanics, goes negative in, I think, September. With the fund balance that we would have with the money we've unfortunately built up, the fund balance, rather than pay for the mechanics, the bus drivers, and provide the service. But if you ask us to spend it down, it doesn't solve our problem. If you look at a five-year approach to the fund balance and you hold, for instance, the city, the county, and Cornell's contributions flat, we project the fund balance disappears in 5 years. Entirely, not down to 10% or down to 15%, it disappears. So, I mean, we're looking at all our sources of income and trying to figure out how to get through it.
I think we're done. Oh, no, Dave and Dooley, I didn't see your hands. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, just a reminder, really. Do I remember correctly that 25 cents on the fare amounts to $1 million a year in revenue?
Well, it's 4 million rides a year, 25 cents being $1 million.
That's what I thought. Okay.
No, I'm sorry.
Please use the microphone.
I'm sorry. 75% of our ridership is Cornell, which is a fixed amount.
Oh.
So that doesn't add up that way. We get about $1 million in passenger revenue is about $1.5 million a year, and Cornell is $2.9 million, it's $3 million. So adding 25%, that won't affect Cornell's.
Right. Okay.
Dooley.
Thank you. I still have the more detailed budget presentation resonating, and what I took from that was that in 5 years we're not going to have a bus system. The idea that Tompkins County should seriously consider upping its contribution feels, Jim, uncomfortable because, and Martha, we did the mortgage recording tax. But looking at the five-year projections, if the partners don't step up and fill in the holes, we're not going to have a bus system. And to cannibalize it, year by year, waiting for the feds to act reasonably, is a scenario for doom. I don't know how, Bill Gray, you can make it any clearer than you have already what you've presented to us. Have the passengers been apprised of the situation that this is in, that we're facing? I think if we went to a a $15 minimum wage throughout, then people could handle increased fees. It's all sort of connected. But you have no control over that. And your control is really coming to the partners. Do you see anything else that you can do?
I wouldn't paint it quite as black. I believe the bus system will still exist in 5 years. It's certainly true that we will have to look at levels of service. We'll have to look at fares. And there are a whole series of assumptions in the budget that you saw, and we would have to adjust those assumptions as we get more information. One of them will be what you do with this over target request. Another will be what happens with the Highway Trust Fund in the next 6 months to 2 years. We will make adjustments, and we will provide levels of service the community is willing to pay for. The community and the federal government are willing to pay for, the state, the city, the county, Cornell. So, there are problems, but we will work with you and we will work with the community.
Bill, Dooley, can I? It won't be a question.
Well, Dooley, you have a statement. Is this a question?
Yes, but if Frank wants to comment, I'm willing to wait.
Oh, well, gee, Frank, go ahead.
It won't be a question. Just in addition to the unknowns, Dooley, there are two unknowns right now. One is Gadabout. Both of these are affected by the Medicaid redesign. One is Gadabout because of the changes in the Medicaid reimbursement. They have lost substantial income. And as you know, they're the ADA. They provide our paratransit piece. If we have to pick up that cost because of the drop in their income, because they won't be able to provide it, that's an unknown. We really don't know what that's going to cost. The other, and Peter is probably more aware of this than I am, the state has embarked on, you've heard the acronym DSRIP, and Reform Act. Because of the state's redesign of Medicaid reimbursement and the service delivery, transportation is going to be a big piece, and that's coming down the pike. They're still talking about that. We have no idea what they may require as far as providing public transportation for that aspect. So there's a couple of new pieces here that are not part of this budget, but could be during the period of time that Carol is asking for and Martha over the next 5 years. That's my add, if you will.
Yes, I have a question.
Go ahead.
We had been told a while ago that TCAT was in line for getting a hydrogen bus. Then we were told it's gone. And I'd like to know what the status of that is, and is there any way to get back on track with that? Because I can imagine there might be sources of money that would help you pay for that, if that's the problem.
The hydrogen bus was earmarked for TCAT. And part of that was a fueling station that was supposed to be in the city of Ithaca. Standard Hydrogen was going to build that station, and they were pretty confident that they would get NYSERDA grants to do that build. They were not successful in doing that. They were seeking other methods or other alternatives to fund the build of the hydrogen station. They just ran out of time. The hydrogen bus project had a very strict timeline through the FTA, and because they couldn't meet that timeline, the project manager needed to move that bus to another transit agency. It was either going to be Ohio or California that already had an infrastructure in place to be able to accept that bus, because the bus was due November 1st, and without fueling capability, they had to make that decision to move it someplace else.
So I guess the rest of us found out about it too late to be helpful. Thank you.
Yep. Carol, I had a
just
question.
A quick one for either Kevin or Joe. Do we need to make some $10,000 correction for that?
No, the way this shows up, the 819 is property tax support. There's another $10,000 of county support, which is a part of the mortgage tax that we keep for ourselves, circles back to that. So in the local revenues, if I've got this right, Kevin, in that $1,164,000 amount, there's another $10,000 of county money. So the sum total of what we give is $829,522.
So that amount that we were supposed to... Okay, let's not even go there. That's down to $10,000, the amount that we...
Oh, God, no. We get the allocation to TCAT is a little less than $700,000.
No, I understand that. But
we keep some for ourselves, and some of that we've earmarked back to supplement this.
I thought it used to be a higher amount.
Kevin.
I wasn't able to get Joe the right number on that. It's more like $120,000. In our share of the mortgage recording tax, so our total contribution is more like $939,522. So it's $120,000 that you would see as part. It appears buried in the local revenues section of the material you have in front of you in the budget book, and that combined with the tax levy is our contribution. The rest, as Bill Gray said, is the pass through.
Thank you.
Let me ask. I lost control of this meeting about halfway through, so I've had 5.5 meetings that went generally well. But what I wanted to ask you all and for your internal discussion, had you thought of the fact that you might have a more palatable number other than $100,000 over a longer period of time to ask the funding partners for? In other words, I get that you need $100,000, but... over a 4 or 5 year period, if you could promise them a smaller amount added on to what they're already given, is that something that you've thought about?
Well, we have discussed what happens if the county does not provide this money, but there are so many unknowns that I don't think I could project out to know, but this is a back and forth iterative process. We tell you what we think we need. You tell us what you can afford. We have to adjust service and individual rates accordingly. So this number, making up numbers. If you said we couldn't afford $100,000, we will provide you $50,000 or $25,000 or some number. Right. We will we'll adopt a budget in December that reflects what we have in revenues and what we anticipate in expenses. Right. Some of it will come from mortgage recording tax or other things. One small item: we lost the hydrogen bus. We have applied for some all-electric buses, but we don't know the status of that request. Diversity shows up in everything, including our buses.
Okay. Hearing nothing else, thank you very much, all of you who came over here and sat with us this evening, especially you, Frank.
Thank you, Jim.
Thanks.
Sorry we went so long.
May I ask you a question?
Sure, absolutely.
How are things going?
Reasonably well. Everything was going quite well until this evening. It was Hall of Fame stuff up until tonight.
Well, I'm concerned that you said you lost control of the meeting.
I did.
Martha spoke.
We all know that dispatching is a stressful job. It has put us in a position and continues and probably will continue to put us in a position where we're forcing overtime upon our staff. That's not good for the morale or for those people that have to work those extended hours. And with the additional dispatcher position that we've requested, we would at least be able to provide relief to that staff. So that is the budget request for 2016.
Question for Lee. Martha?
Hi, Lee. So I'm looking at page 89 of our budget. Then you've got the second line on that page is overtime. So 2013 is 44,000. 2014 is almost 50,000. And then it's down to 34,000 for 2015. And that's the number for 2016. Does that assume? So that's a drop. Is that you're assuming that because if the position is granted, that would be able to overtime?
It would probably come down some, but I wouldn't bank on it coming down an awful lot with the backfill that will be required as we do training for new dispatchers. We spend about 500 to 600 hours when somebody resigns or retires, and that consequently, because of the minimal staff, requires overtime during that training period. The other part of that is that overtime number that you're looking at just reflects the halftime component. So you can take that and double it up in the payroll lines to get a true reflection of what overtime costs.
Oh, right. Oh, right. Okay.
Anyone else? Yes, Mike.
Lee, you talked about the work you've been doing with interoperability. How are we doing with the rural police departments that were wanted to talk to other counties?
We're in the midst of about $4 million worth of grants, some of which will be dedicated toward creating that interoperability with adjacent counties. And, in fact, the garage was loaded last week with microwave radio equipment that came in through a recent contract that will be deployed to link us to four other counties. We've also got a contract established to place base stations not only in Tompkins County but on towers in adjacent counties that can bridge the two systems and achieve at least some of that capability to talk between units and between systems. And so we're in the midst of a pretty ambitious interoperable communications program to address not only the concerns of the village police departments, but numerous other departments that work cross lines as well.
Thank you.
Leslin.
Can you say one more time what is causing the overtime? And the second half of that question is, will that additional body reduce that overtime?
Yes. I'll just flash three pieces of paper at you that if I'd have thought about it, I'd have incorporated into this program. This is a tracking mechanism that we created in the office to show where vacancies occur. Where you see red through that diagram.
I see red all over, Lee.
You see red all over?
Kevin, can you blow it?
those are people out on disability from our staff. Where you see the yellow is a vacancy. Where you see the blue is dispatchers in training. Solidly across the year 2013 and 2014, you'll see that red disability as well as vacancies that occurred. And we've got it, I would say, under control now, but it extended into the first half of this year. What we've had are a number of retirements and people that have moved on to other positions, but more importantly, at least 10 cases of disability in the last 3 years that have extended 2 months or more with the dispatch staff. And my sense is that through the funding of this position, it will allow us a flex position to fill when we have those long-term vacancies and thus reduce some of the overtime costs where we're forcing the other dispatchers at time and a half to backfill.
What are you doing with the people up there, Lee?
Pardon, Joe?
if I could
What are you doing with the people out there? Why is everybody out in disability? What's going on up there, Lee?
All right,
thank you.
Thank you.
If I can just speak to something that Lee said, too. When you look at the overtime, the actual expenditures in 2013 and 2014, mentally multiply those by three.
Remember that crazy accounting system of ours. So the real overtime over the past couple of years, 130, 150. So in terms of how this budget is constructed, it assumes a relatively large decrease in overtime, in part because of what we're doing with the position.
All right.
Anyone else? Thank you, Lee.
Go ahead. Can I take just a minute? I know you don't want statements very much.
Department heads are fine.
You can.
Oh, department heads are fine.
Yeah.
I just wanted to bring to your attention a recent series of incidents. And within the last 2 weeks, our sheriff's deputies have employed the use of automatic external defibrillators 5 times in Tompkins County. It's an unusual number to have that many cardiac arrests. And one case in particular, I bring this up because a year ago I came before this board with Joe to ask for the funding of automatic external defibrillators for county facilities, and included in that were the sheriff's department vehicles for their replacement for long overdue long-time defibrillators. We had a call in a rural area a little over 2 weeks ago. A patient went into sudden cardiac arrest, and the wife called 911 instinctively and went through our system. Not only were responders sent to the scene, but a sheriff's deputy as well who applied the defibrillator. We gave pre-arrival instructions through our dispatch staff to the wife. EMS came, continued on, communicated this to the hospital. They were met by a full cardiac coronary care team. When they got there, the person is alive today. Why do I bring this up? Number of things that happened because of decisions that were made at this table. You had a family member that instinctively knew to call 911 that had phase two wireless technology that we got through a grant in the state. When it came into a phone system that was just bought through a grant and funded through actions of this board, a computer-aided dispatch system and mapping system plotted that location, identified the closest responders. Our sheriff's deputy responded, used an automatic external defibrillator that you funded. Radio communication system and paging system worked flawlessly to coordinate a half a dozen agencies, and a consolidated dispatch center had the capacity of 4 dispatchers that were able to talk to numerous responders and give emergency medical dispatch instructions to the wife. I mention this because I think it's important for you, it's important for me, that you know that decisions that this board, this legislature, has made over the 10 years and investments that you've made into the systems that and personnel that my department employs saved a life. They've saved many lives. And it's important that you know that decisions that you made here and the process that you put all of us through has saved lives in Tompkins County. And I thank you for that. And I want you to know that it has made, everything you've done for emergency response has made a difference in many, many lives. Thank you.
Thank you, Lee. Are we done? Thank you. Appreciate it. It's always good to hear that some of the things we do here work out in a very positive way.
I think I'm supposed to toast to that, Lee. That was awesome. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks.
No more questions. I believe we have the History Center. And it's Rod Howell, right? Am I right? And the History Center is Chapter 5, page 16, and they have 32, 33, and 34 OTR.
Okay.
Go ahead, Mr.
Howe. So we want to be around to archive that story about the importance of emergency services for future generations to do research on. So keep that in mind. So thank you for past support on behalf of the employees and the trustees of the History Center. We want to thank you for your past support. We take our mission very seriously of using the tools of history to understand the past, gain perspective on the present, and make informed decisions about the future. We view ourselves as a key asset to the county residents and are committed to engaging with as many county residents as possible through archives and collections, the John Marcham Research Library, programs and events, and of course our 8-square schoolhouse. We're a member of Kids Discover the Trail and Discovery Trail. I'm new to this position. I've been on the job 7 months, so if I haven't provided all the information you're looking for this evening, I'll keep that in mind for next year when I'm here to make a presentation. But this represents the ask in the recommended budget right now is an increase of $2,016 over last year's allocation, plus a one-time allocation of $25,000, totaling the $132,929. Just to give you a little bit of background, we operate on a fiscal year that goes July 1 through June 30th. Our current budget that we're in right now, the expected income is around $350,000, with expected expenses more than that. We do have some small reserves that we're prepared to tap into to help the new executive director build a foundation for moving forward on the future. I see my job as securing a stronger foundation for the History Center and see ourselves in a slow, deliberate growth mode over the next few years. I wish this timeline went out even further. I could have added 2011, 2012. My understanding was that 5-6 years ago, we had maybe it would have been 6 or 7 full-time equivalents. So you can see that we're what I consider kind of a bare-bone staff right now. Right now, we're at around 3.75 full-time equivalents. I'm hoping that next year we are able to grow that by one full-time equivalent through a part-time bookkeeper administrative manager, and also I'm hoping to receive funding from NISCA, the New York State Council on the Arts, for a part-time position that would fill in some gaps right now. We lost a curator position last year, a full-time curator position that we have not filled, so we did increase the hours of the existing staff a little bit, and I'm looking next year to create a halftime position to complete this concept I have of an integrated team. So the one time, we understand that this would be just for this next year, if approved, $25,000 for a part-time office manager slash bookkeeper. We do not have such a position right now, which means with a small staff, the executive director gets involved in every aspect of running the organization, and I don't feel it's a good use of my time. I would rather the executive director be able to spend time on development work, enhanced grant development, and certainly we're in a period where we need to have several discussions about our future in terms of a move and who might be with us in some new exciting center, and more on that in just a minute. This position would be ideally shared with Historic Ithaca. Historic Ithaca and the History Center have had a long history of working together, but we're trying to be much more intentional of looking for where there are synergies for us to build on. And this office manager, even a part-time office manager shared between the two organizations, would start to build that platform for us to explore other synergies, not just with Historic Ithaca, but with some other organizations as well. We fully understand that it would be a one-year commitment if approved, but I do think it would give me the flexibility to seek funds. It free up some of my time to, again, build that secure foundation for moving forward. I did put in a couple of other requests in terms of OTR. I'm not prepared. I know that they're not recommended. I'm not prepared to fight for them at this point or make an argument for them. This has been a learning curve for me, and next year I may come back and have a better sense of what I would look to this county to help fund in terms of a base and just have a better sense of the needs and what would be reasonable to approach the county for. So I'm not making a case that these would be back in the budget. And just, I thought I'd close with just some key points. I've already mentioned this idea of an office manager and a potential halftime exhibit program technical assistant. We're not sure what to call it yet. That would be the funding from the New York State Council on the Arts. We are working with Big Red Consulting. They're a team of students will be working with us over the next year to develop a business plan to help us think farther out and what are different strategies for thinking about our income streams, setting up targets, benchmarking ourselves against other like centers across the state. So I'm excited about this process that we're hoping to engage with Big Red Consulting. We, I think you know that there's a new heritage tourism plan, draft plan, and the History Center sees itself as playing an important role in helping implement some of those strategies. We're very excited about playing that role. I think it gives us, I think it fits with our mission and gives us a new opportunity to highlight some of our work, but also work in concert with others. We, as you know, are going to be moving. Our current lease ends at the end of 2018. So right now, there's this emerging idea of what I'll just call a heritage education center, where there would be co-location with other entities. So, for instance, it might be components of Historic Ithaca. It might include the visitor center that's downtown. Again, the concept would be that this would be downtown, central, near the commons, on the commons, that it might include some other cultural, historic organizations who need a center to create some synergies, to really create a destination place, a place to orient not only our county members to its history and heritage, but tourists as well. So that's, we're hoping to host a meeting in November of interested parties to start exploring that more fully. So if you have any questions about that, let me know. Certainly, as you can imagine, a place like the History Center is about oral histories and intergenerational dialogues, but I don't think we've done enough in terms of archiving, collecting, recording those sort of stories, so that's a new initiative. As you may know, one of our key assets is maps and photos. We have lots of maps. So we have a new initiative that we're moving forward on that would digitize our Sanborn maps. Those are the insurance maps, but other maps as well. Integrate that with census data and also other information that folks would have this web-based new tool to go to and do research and find out information about past residents who may have lived in one home over a period of time, how different segments of the population moved around the county. So we're excited about utilizing our maps more fully. And then we're already very involved. There's a bicentennial commission gearing up to celebrate the county's bicentennial in 2017. The History Center is very excited to be working on that and certainly plans on some special activities as a result of the discussions this commission is having for 2017. I invite you to come to our new exhibit, which will open up on Friday, called In Memoriam. It's focused on the cemeteries in Tompkins County. So it's not just an exhibit. There will be tours, scavenger hunts, and several programs. So come and come to In Memoriam and participate in some of our events.
Question for Mr. Howe. Duly, Martha Carroll.
I don't understand why you think you need this part-time position for only a year.
Oh, I need it for more than a year. But I would love it to be part of an ongoing thing. But I think for now, we're happy to get us started with the position. We need it permanently. So the goal for me will be to find funding to make this a permanent position.
So you want it to become a grant-funded position, not something that the county supports?
I would love for the county to support it. This seemed like the reasonable approach that Joe was proposing for now. And that's not to say that next year I might not come back and see if it gets built in. as a permanent request. But at least it gets us started.
Martha.
That was essentially my question, too. Thanks.
Carol.
Yeah, well, thank you. That was one of my questions. And the other, maybe it's for Kevin. I don't understand. On Section 5, page 17, is the History Center total expenditures and revenues leaving a net local. And I don't understand those numbers. They don't seem to add. If the expenditures for 2016 were projected at 367 and revenues at 343, how does that leave a net local of 105?
It doesn't. Between my still being relatively new and Rod's being new, and the fact that in the end, when we're putting the budget together, the program summary information has to fall roughly last in the priority list. And it's something we do exchange via email. It's probably the piece that's most fraught with potential for error. And the form is not, although I've tried to improve it incrementally over the years, it's not probably immediately obvious to someone who's confronting it for the first time like Rod was, just what's being asked for. So I would be happy to work with Rod to get the 2016 numbers to line up with what the budget request is. Yeah.
And part of it might be that since, you know, I'm new and I was just putting together the budget starting July 1 through June 30th, it's hard to then think about, okay, but calendar year, January through December of next year, how does that work out?
Okay. Well, I understand that. So can you give me just a rough ballpark or provide it later? Of your total budget and what your other major funding sources are?
So it's around $350,000 for this year, and it's a mix. It's grants, it's corporate foundations, it's personal giving, it's going after federal grants. So it's a real mix that we pull together. You know, just to give you a sense of our budget's actually pretty straightforward because of. About $200,000 is staff and benefits, and then a little over $100,000 is our rent utilities. So, you know, our expenses right now expected for this fiscal year, July 1 through June 30th, are $367,000. That doesn't leave a lot for all the incidentals, you know, insurance and supplies and whatnot. So $200,000 staff and benefits, $100,000 for our rent and utilities, and then everything that it costs to operate a center.
Okay, and so from those other sources, then, where are you expecting to get the, if we do this first year of the additional staff, do you have an expected source for the next few years?
We will put in, I do have a request in TANISCA right now, for 2016 funding. It's operation fund, so the way I put that in, it gives us some flexibility, so I would anticipate using some of those funds.
Anyone else? Thank you very much.
Okay.
Welcome to county government.
Thanks very much.
Okay. And last, we have county administration. They were supposed to be on at 7:35. It is now 8:15. Give us 10 good minutes, Joe, and then we'll go home.
Okay. I was going to say, I should be able to get this done in an hour. I do have two parts. This is the operating budget for my department, but it's also a summary of the capital program. So I'll go through both parts, and I'll do it, as Mike would say, as crisply as I can. Overall budget, this is the operating budget for the Department of Administration. You can see that expenditures are down a little bit. That's largely because of the change in fringe benefits. Also relates a little bit to, Stop DWI is a part of the administration budget, so some changes in that account. Revenues are also down there. It's entirely because of what's happening in Stop DWI. But the net local, which is the important number, is essentially flat from where it was in 2015. In terms of what's in this budget, you can break it down into some easy pieces. Personnel is nearly 80% of our entire budget, a little over $800,000, leaving $234,000 in non-personnel expenses, which brings you to the total budget of $1,042,000. Some of that is offset by revenue. Again, that is almost all stop DWI revenue. A little bit of room tax still comes to our budget, but most of that is stop DWI. So the local cost of the department's budget is $731,000. What's in the non-personnel items? There's the ordinary, but then there's also central things that we carry in our budget, in part because it's a part of the management function, in part because there's kind of no other place to put some of these central costs. So one of the larger items in our non-personnel budget is the cost of broadcast meetings in these chambers, and it's a contract with Cooperative Extension. It's currently at $26,000, and there's an OTR that relates to that as well. The community outreach program, you recall this as the program that we have kind of entered into as a part of a three-party venture. $20,000 is in the Department of Administration budget to support that. So it was in 2015, and it is in 2016 as well. My office has a function of WDIC support. So there are funds that we've been providing to support a number of initiatives that come out of WDIC. The most obvious example recently, the climate survey was funded with these dollars. And we will do some follow-up activities on climate survey also using this account. A new one, relatively new, it appeared for the first time in 2015. We have been doing translation and interpretation services in a decentralized, fragmented way for a very long time. We are obligated in many cases to provide these services, and we choose to provide it in other cases. We felt we could do better if we would centralize those costs, so those are in my department's budget, both in 2015 and 2016. We have something called federal exclusion checks, and Paula can go, I don't know, 20 minutes, a half an hour on this one, where when we enter into contracts with vendors and when we hire employees, we need to make sure that they have not run afoul of federal health care funding rules, Medicare, Medicaid, largely restricted to things that relate to federal grants. But we have to run vendors and individuals through this electronic checking system to make sure that they're okay and that we meet our compliance requirements. Last item in non-personnel is the largest. Again, stop DWI is a part of the budget, and $65,000 of their expenditures are direct payments to law enforcement agencies and the Alcohol and Drug Council. Influences on the budget, the operating budget, you've seen this in a number of areas now. It's the transition from paper-based to electronic systems. Ours is the contract system that integrates with what Rick is doing in RFPs and bids. There's also funds in here for an electronic policy development process. So instead of a paper-based policy refresher, renewal, construction system, it will be electronic in the future. And there are maintenance costs that go along with that. So, again, policies and contracts. The other influence is kind of hard to quantify, and it's simply the need to be nimble. Our office has to adjust to changing circumstances. Broadband, last year it was the state's government efficiency plan and shared services, so we have to be quick on our feet and able to respond to changing circumstances and challenges. And I know Paula is behind me, and she's very much a part of that skill set that allows us to be nimble and to respond. In terms of full-time equivalents, essentially flat at 8. Two are in stop DWA, the other 6 in the other functions of administration. As you know, I requested some OTRs for my own office. I recommended that we fund some of those. And just to show how uniformly bad I can be, I rejected some of my own requests. And so I'll go through those really quickly. None are large. The first is to provide annual money, target money, to be able to maintain that new electronic policy manual system. In our new systems, there is generally an annual maintenance charge that goes along with that. They're generally cloud-based. We don't have servers that we house these on. It's cloud-based. There's a maintenance contract, including this one. It's $1,800 a year that needs to be in target because it's going to be here year after year. The same thing is true with the next one, which is We're partnering with finance in the electronic contract RFP and bid system. Again, our part of its contracts, but we are both contributing money to it. That's not in the target budget, so we need to adjust our target to be able to pay for that. The third is what I referred to earlier, which is a few additional dollars for CCE to make sure that we have adequate staff to be able to broadcast your meetings and still allow existing staff to take a little time off from time to time, to take a vacation, to do those kinds of things. So we've asked for $5,000 in ongoing target money to be able to support that. Bad Joe is on this page, where I asked for a little bit of money for the community outreach program, and we did not put money behind that. We are coming forward with some rollover requests that will help us have a little bit of money so that when we do outreach, when we do parades, when we set up booths, we have things that we can provide to the community that explains who we are. The second one was the city's request. There was no other place to put the OTR, so it is in my budget that we have requested the $30,000 for underwriting the city's waterfront parks. That's in this budget. And in a very similar way, the $75,000 for the municipal youth services, also known as rural youth services, have come out of my budget as my request. Amy went through the details of that last night, and we can go through more if you would like. So those are the basic elements of the 2016 operating budget for administration.
Are there questions for Joe about the operating side? I'm sorry.
Glenn and Dan.
Joe, so the $75,000 for the funding of municipal youth services is not going to be funded, or is it going to come out of your regular budget?
It's right now it's not funded. So it was a request. It's like any other OTR that was requested. So it shows as a request. But there's currently no money behind it. The legislature would have to amend my budget to be able to put funds behind the municipal youth allocation.
Will you argue for it or against it?
Both.
Peter?
Well, it's...
You want to use the mic if you're going to talk?
That's not a fair question. It's a policy issue.
It is a policy issue, which is why I wanted to make sure we brought it forward.
Glenn? Good. Dan?
The Translation Interpretation Service. Yep. Was 2015 the first year that we're using it?
It's not the first time the county's used it. It's the first time that it was centralized within a single department, and then everybody buys off that common contract. Everybody receives services through that common contract. We pay for it.
And is it a lump sum that we pay some outside service?
No, it's as needed.
As needed.
Yeah.
Somewhere along the line, can we get a status report about how much it's being used?
Yeah, in fact, Kevin can probably generate that quickly. We just did it again today. In fact, we may need a little more money this year.
It's been utilized much more than we would have expected with the $4,000. Was just a start. We've had 1 month where there were $2,000 worth of services were billed. We'll be bringing forward a budget adjustment asking that target to be increased. And Joe and I were just talking today about, and I had a chance to talk with Rick yesterday about how we should estimate that based on a wildly fluctuating monthly total for billing in this year. It's exceeded the 4,000 already. So,
and when you see how it's being spent, do you know which? Be able to tell which departments are using it?
Yes, we're keeping it. As the bills come in, we have that broken out.
Thank you.
Yeah. Dooley.
Why did this wind up in administration and not in the Office of Human Rights?
It's much like the other costs that you saw that are central costs. It's just an appropriate place to put something that's a distributed cost like that.
It could be either place.
It could be anywhere. But again, to be able to generate the kinds of things quickly that we're talking about tonight, and to be able to watch over how it's being used, it made sense to put it in administration.
Anyone else? Carol.
Yeah, so Glenn's question reminded me that maybe it happened one of the times I wasn't here, but I'm not sure that we've gone over this year what the process is for amending the budget.
I will do that at the end when we get done. I will do that at the end.
Okay. And then I had just a similar question for Joe about the rural youth services. Why is that not in youth services?
Originally, I think we wanted to bring it to you as a policy decision. If you approve it, it's very likely that we will move the, well, we would move the money into youth services. I wanted it to come from my office to you as kind of a policy. I don't want to call it a recommendation because that's too stark, but it's we wanted it to come from us to you.
Did they request it first, and then you decided to put it there?
It was collaborative. It really arose in the springtime when it looked like we would have the capacity to do some things that we haven't been able to do in the past, including this. So at that time, it was one of the whiteboard items that we wanted to try to bring forward. So it was then Amy and I collaborated on amounts and approach and so forth.
Thank you.
Anyone else on the... on the first part of the county minister. Oh, Leslie, I'm sorry.
Thank you. Joe, I just need a repeat.
Sure.
The things that were not, that you did not recommend,
yes.
You're saying you have some rollover requests coming?
Only in the one, the very first one. So
oh,
there's some,
that.
Yeah, it's in the hopper.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Anyone else for Joe? Capital program. Thank you.
Yeah, and I'm going to hit you with a lot of numbers on a late night, but it's not as bad as it probably will look. And there will be time to, if you want to look through the book, there's a lot of details in the capital program. So I'm trying to summarize this efficiently tonight. We have a five-year capital program, and when you approve this capital program in the budget, it really establishes the budget for our capital projects over the next several years. So this is a go-forward kind of a document. So it's important that we look at it. It does cover the period 2016 through 2020. You can see that in the general fund, that's ultimately where things could be supported by property taxes. The total amount over that five-year period is $25.4 million. When we looked at the enterprise funds, this is the airport and solid waste. They're businesses. They carry their own costs. You can see there that the total five-year plan is for expenditures of $18.28 million. Very front-loaded. You can see that much of that occurs in 2016. Most of that's the airport, and I'll go over that. So the totals are, on this line, in the 2016 line, almost $21 million worth of projects, and over the five-year period, they add up to almost $44 million. An important footnote on all this, though, is how much of that $43 million comes out of local dollars, not supported by business enterprise revenue, federal grants, local contributions, and so forth. And you can see that it's large. I mean, I don't want to say it's only $16.85 million, but of the total spending of $43 million, it's about a third would come from local dollars. I'm going to break it down into general fund versus the enterprise funds, beginning with facilities. There are only four projects that we're talking about in facilities. All of them are slightly different than what was in the 2015 plan. So beginning with the facility restoration, this is the $800,000 a year commitment to essentially addressing deferred maintenance. We've made a commitment that over the long haul, we will spend $800,000 a year in each of 3 years. And then the original plan was to take a two-year break and then come back and do three more $800,000 installments, take a two-year break, and then do three $800,000 installments again. That was the cycle. You heard Arel tonight talking about the need for us to really take care of a lot of things now. So this plan, the reason these are highlighted, these two, this plan proposes not to take the initial two-year break, but to keep going on this until 2018, through 2018, And then take that two-year pause in 2019 and 2020 and then come back again for more installments. And I think you saw tonight, and you, if you want more details, you can see more details. There is definitely a need, and I'd say a pressing need, to do that level of work over the next couple of years. So that's a change from what you saw in 2015. There are two related projects, both in the jail, one for additional video cameras that are digital cameras to replace the old analog cameras. They fit into the system that is a digital system now at the PSB, a little over $100,000 for that. And importantly, the jail access control system. This is a system that opens doors and locks things, and it's really a major part of the operation of the jail. It's original to the facility. It has to be replaced. It's a little less than $500,000. Those are new to the capital plan, and they would occur in 2016. The little item here is the bus stop. Originally, this was a $350,000 budget. We've added another $50,000. We put it into the planning phase of it. We think it's going to be a little more expensive than we originally thought. That's the only other change, though. There's more projects in highways than in facilities. I'm not going to go through each of these because there's really not much change between last year's plan and this year's plan. I will highlight the first thing on Coddington Road because it's so much money. In the final year of the plan, there's $5.73 million that is programmed in the plan. However, it's important you know that if significant amounts of federal and state money don't come through, that project will not go forward. It's dependent upon the receipt of state and federal money. So that is essentially a contingent project. The next few I've highlighted, beginning with Ellis Hollow. This would be the final phase of Ellis Hollow. I put it in red because it's a bit higher than it was before, and also this is dependent upon Cornell contributing $600,000 to this project. And I don't know that we can count on that. So I want you to know that that is also kind of a contingent project, and we will talk about what that will mean if Cornell doesn't come up with the $600,000, which is essentially a stretch that will not get done. So this number may change between now and the time we're talking about implementation. Malloryville I've highlighted only because what was going to be an improvement or replacement of Malloryville Road Bridge, based on what we've heard from the community and the town, it's more likely it will be a replacement of the Red Mill Road Bridge down the street and a maintenance commitment to Malloryville. So that's the money is the same as it was. The only new project is South George Road Bridge. This is new to the plan. It's about $600,000. It would begin work. Planning would be in 2017, the work in 2018. There's also a capital, the aquifer study a few years ago. We put it into the capital program. It's about $77,000 a year. So over the period of time, it's a little less than $400,000. No change from where we've been over the past few years on this. With respect to the enterprise funds, again, these are self-supported. Beginning with the airport, a pretty aggressive capital plan. Not much, in fact, there's nothing new on here. The only reason I've highlighted the terminal security and expansion is because, much like what I said with Coddington, we need to find other sources of money to be able to support this project. Some can be paid for with passenger fares, PFCs, but not all of it. There's just not enough passenger activity. So Mike Hall has committed himself to go out and try to find additional dollars to support this. If those don't come, this project would either be delayed or it would not happen. The last slide in the series in solid waste, this is no different than it was in 2015. It's continued improvements to facilities and the site upgrade. There is some work that will happen in 2015-16 that was approved last year. The money's already in hand for that. This would be the last 3 years of that plan as per the plan from 2015. No change there. I'm almost done. You can just hang up for a second. Debt service projections, what's all this mean in terms of the county's debt service costs? The bars here represent existing debt. So if we didn't borrow another nickel, this is what our debt service would look like over the next 10 years. There's some other capital costs, and aquifer would be, I guess, the example of that. It would add to that, so those are ongoing costs. The green represents the additional debt service costs that are associated with the capital program based on our estimates of what debt service would be for those. And then the last slide in my packet is what happens if that is our debt service schedule over the next few years. The blue line on the bottom just tracks those debt expenses. The red line at the top is what by policy we have said we are going to be committing for capital, for debt service support. And you recall that we have said in policy our levy is going to go up by 0.5% a year, and that money will be dedicated for capital purposes. That's the red line that you can see rising at a predictable pace over the next 10 years. It would go on forever. This will give us the capacity in the future to rely less on debt, spend more in cash instead of debt. And also, as we know, projects happen. Things will happen that we aren't foreseeing today. This also acknowledges that we would have a capacity to deal with future projects if they did come up. So that's, I think that's it for the capital program.
Question. Julie and Mike.
Well, I'm just going to look at your page 7, which is the highway capital program. And I see the third one listed is Ellis Hollow Phase.
Yep.
Freeze Road Bridge, the fourth one. And I just got an email this week from the Freeville Conservation Advisory Council.
Julie, please use the mic.
I thought I was.
No.
Am I too close, too far?
Far.
Oh.
Lean in a little, please.
Yes. Is this better?
Yes. Much better.
Freeze Road Bridge is proposed as a two-lane replacement. Dryden and Varna are on record as wanting a one-lane bridge just like the town of Ithaca got. That bridge is historic in the same way. And so I'm troubled by dollar estimates based on something that hasn't been decided that is obviously going to be controversial. And I wondered how you account for that.
Yeah, Jeff is on the record in saying that this, he knows that this needs discussion. So we're certainly aware that there is an interest in looking at a one-lane alternative. So nothing is going to happen on Freeze Road without plenty of conversation about this.
So you don't footnote things in this presentation or necessarily in the many pages that constitute the capital program. So I don't know what other things are embedded in here that I don't know about, but I knew about that one, so I brought it up. And I think it would be useful to have things like that footnoted in the documents.
Okay. I mean, if you have suggestions on how to do that, I'm open to those.
Anyone else? Mike and then Carol.
On the airport capital, the airport manager talked about a project to relocate the fuel farm. I didn't see anything there. Is that not made it onto that at
no,
this point?
Has not. That would be new.
Okay.
Carol?
On the planning portion of the budget, where was that?
On the aquifer study?
The aquifer study, but that's sure. Not the one I wanted to ask about. We've talked for quite a number of years about the need to there've been two items we've talked about needing to maybe address in the capital budget instead of each year separately. And one is the Capital Reserve Fund for Natural, Scenic, and Recreational Resource Protection. We've been doing that for years, and we're always doing it one time.
And it's in this budget. It is funded in this budget, but as a one-time item again, yes.
Right. So that one, and then the other one that's come up over the years that you've said at some point it might make sense to address it with capital funds, and certainly what we saw over the last few years, and in particular this year with weather and stream problems washing away and storms, that's obviously not going to be an expense that goes away.
The stream corridor money that we have in the budget.
Yeah, so those are two items that were originally requested, one at $25,000 added to target, and one is capital reserve at $50,000. Why not put those in the capital budget, or at what
point? You don't need to. Because the capital budget typically is for the projects over $100,000 with long lives. So this was a bit of an exception. I think there was a desire, I can't remember, Dooley, where the desire came from to put it in capital, whether it was us or the ledge. Yeah. But if you want to achieve what I think you're suggesting, which is to make that target money instead of one-time money, because it really doesn't make any difference if it's in the capital plan or it's in the operating budget in terms of its security. It really doesn't. You could simply amend my recommended budget to change that one-time designation to target, and it would have the same effect. So by putting it in capital, it's a place to account for it. We wouldn't be borrowing for it, so we wouldn't be incurring debt or anything like that. It would be just like the aquifer study, which is there as much as a matter of convenience as accounting. So, again, all you would have to do is amend it to take one time and make it target, and it would achieve that effect of putting it into the baseline.
Well, it would achieve that for the next few years. My thinking is more, and the committee's thinking, and just some discussion we've had in past years has been that this is more in the nature of infrastructure. That it is, you know,
but
that it's...
But we're not building. I think in the case of Stream Corridor, I believe we just enter into contracts with, for example, Soil and Water. Am I correct? So I think that's a contractual relationship. We're not out there with forces building, nor are we actually, I don't believe we're doing the construction ourselves.
Stream Corridor is the one that Scott Doyle runs, that's
he staffs
in partnership
it.
With right. The landowners along the way, who put some of their own money in, and which enables us to maintain the corridor of the streams in a way that it's not washing over the banks, creating problems for downstream landowners or for our roads or bridges, if we maintain the stream corridor. So in that sense, it's infrastructure.
We do the building.
Rick, go ahead.
Okay.
I'd like to weigh in out because usually the capital projects fund is for bricks and mortar. Occasionally it could be used for large pieces of equipment. And when you get into plans and you get into grant programs and renovation programs and things that you can't close the project and put it on your fixed assets, it's difficult to programmatically put this in this kind of fund. And so I would go back and say that every one of these projects that you see in your capital project has to eventually be closed out and put on your fixed asset as a capital item. And I've had a real problem with the aquifer study being in this particular program, but I haven't said anything because it's been there for a while and it's going to be there for a while. But you really don't have anything to I don't even know when this particular item can be closed and put on the fixed assets because it's of an ongoing nature. And to entertain more of these type of programs or studies or grants to, it would not be appropriate to place it in the capital project.
So how do we address ditches then? So we're engaged in a highway.
Highway has that in their budget, right? That's in their operating budget.
Well, the road maintenance program that's now in the capital budget.
So they have an ongoing road maintenance program that's in the operating budget, and then they also do capital projects. So it depends on which drainage thing you're talking about. If you're talking about Ellis Hollow and drainage, then it's a part of a larger capital project that we borrowed for. If you're talking about other ditches that we just do routinely to make sure that they have free flow, that's in highways operating budget.
Anyone else? Thank you, Joe. Carol asked me a question, and let me describe to you what I think we will be doing. We are done with the presentations. We have voting meeting on the 13th, the 15th, and the 19th are scheduled meetings. We have a budget forum on October 7th, which is here at 7 p.m. And the way we would like to do the resolutions or the changes that you want to make to Joe's budget, Kevin, and you correct me if I'm wrong, we legislators individually will contact you with what they want to do, and you will put a list together, and we will see that at the first voting meeting. It's not a change from in the past. Let me just say this to you all, though. We will try to schedule according to, number one, the way they came in, and number two, the availability of the department head at that time. So if you're the first one on the list and the department head is not available, then you're not going to be the first one on the list. So it's contingent on when department heads can be here or be at the meeting. And so I would hope that no one feels slighted if they put their thing in right away and they're not number one on the list. So we will be able to do that in a way that works for the department heads and Kevin. So my suggestion is, and please note this, we would like for the first round on the 13th to have all requests into the office by noon on October 8th, which is 8 days away, roughly. So you have until noon on October 8th to put your changes in that we would probably look at if the department head is available on the 13th or the 15th. Carol?
Refresh my memory on the budget forum versus hearing. So the forum, are we just presenting to the public, or are we taking input from the public?
It's interactive. So we present. I'll give a presentation very similar to the budget presentation, but the community can ask questions, make comments, whatever they choose to do. It's much less formal than the public hearing, which occurs later.
Okay, so might I respectfully request of the chair that since we may get input from the public, that you give us one more day to ruminate on what the public might say to us on the night of the 7th before we have to get our...
Well, then, that work for you? No, it doesn't.
Does that work if we get them in by the 9th at noon instead of the 8th or even the 8th at 5 o'clock?
What's your pleasure, Mr. Chairman?
Well, I mean, given the conversation that we've had in terms of when your availability is, I would like to stick with the noon on Thursday time if I could. And if you need to ruminate on things, you would have that opportunity, and they could go in on the 15th. Or at some point, Kevin, is there a time, for example, if we're doing noon on Thursday and they're not in 13, do we want to have a day? We're not here on the 12th, so do we want to move something into, like, in the middle of the day on the 13th for the 15th meeting? Does that work? But it doesn't give really time to hunt up a department head.
Right. That's one of the challenges we have when they're so close together. Okay. And to Carol's question, we're complicated a bit by the Columbus Day holiday falling where it does, so that the staff availability to manage the queuing up of the amendments is less than it might otherwise be.
I would like to leave it at noon on Thursday, if I could. Any other questions? Martha?
Are there any other changes? And I wonder, and we usually start with the tax levy, and, you know, if you make this motion, it would change the levy,
sure.
Blah, blah, blah. If could we start that first voting meeting with the adjustment in pensions and then sort of see where that puts us, and then if there are any other changes since you presented your budget, you know, sort of step back and say, well, what more do we know? That'd be a great place to start.
I can reasonably well promise that all the considerations that we know about now will be there the first day.
Jim, could you go through those dates again quickly?
And location.
The EBC meetings and the...
They're all here. It's the... You want the voting meetings? Yeah. Well, let me... October. October 7th is the budget forum here, 7 p.m. October 13th, 5:30, voting here. October 15th, 5:30, voting here. If we need a third meeting, that would be the 19th, 5:30, here. A tentative vote on the budget on October 20th. And Columbus Day, we're off. And try to get all requests into Kevin by noon on October 8th. Martha.
You mean a vote at the legislature on the tentative budget? That's the legislature.
On the 20th.
On the 20th, okay. Yep. So the expanded budget committee will vote on the will vote out a tentative budget.
Yes.
The 15th. Okay.
Again, it's the tentative budget. The final vote is after the public hearing and sometime in November. And as you can all remember, that's necessary because we have to get things in place to let the state know and over, you know, tax cap and all that. So any other questions? Let me just say the first 5.5 meetings went reasonably well. We ended up on time, and then I lost control, but we still ended up okay. So I appreciate all of your efforts in being here as much as you could to get to this process. Sometimes it's clumsy, but we do it, and we're one of the few legislatures that do it, and I think we do it reasonably well. So thank you all for coming.
Here, here.